The ad reads, "Casual Encounters. I am a 36-year-old felon and I can play anywhere between the ages of 30 and 39 depending on if I shave. I'm a line cook and work late nights at a bar. If you'd like to have me as your strictly platonic date for Thanksgiving, but have me pretend to be in a very long or serious relationship with you to torment your family, I'm game. I can do these things at your request. Openly hit on other guests while you act like you don't notice. Instigate discussions about politics and or religion. Propose to you in front of everyone. Pretend to get really drunk. Sorry, I don't drink, but I used to. A lot. Too much, in fact. I know the drill. Start an actual physical fight with a family member, either inside or out on the front lawn for all the neighbors to see. I require no pay but the free meal I will receive as a guest. Do not contact me with unsolicited services or offers."
Plus Ones Welcomed. Part 1 of the RSVP series. Written by 36 Save Files. Read by Argentum Lupin. It starts with a personals ad. Actually, it starts with the rapidly approaching holiday season and Reese's mother's insistence that, "You will be there for Thanksgiving, Reese. This is non-negotiable." Reese's protest that he would rather eat glass than be subjected to Aunt Martha and Uncle Thomas and their son Jeffrey fall on deaf ears. "Bring a date this time. You know Martha's kids are all married or engaged. It makes me look bad when you show up alone year after year. What about Yvette? She's a nice girl."
"Yvette and I are just friends, Mother," Reese says through gritted teeth. The conversation doesn't really improve from there. So it's already on his mind when Von texts in the ad.
"The solution to your problems, bro?"
Reese knows Von means it as a joke, doesn't really expect him to call the number. Reese knows he shouldn't really call the number. He calls the number. One semi-awkward conversation later.
"I mean, that ad was kind of a joke, but what the hell, right? It's not like I have anything better to do."
And Reese has a date for Thanksgiving.
Jack is not what Reese was expecting.
Reese is not sure what he was expecting, except that the tall man in the worn leather jacket, leaning against the old Camaro in the Starbucks parking lot, is not it. He's older than Reese by more than a few years, but his face has an angular handsomeness that Reese is not immune to, if he's being perfectly frank. "Yeah," Reese thinks. "I can work with this."
Jack appears to think the same as he lets out a low whistle as Reese approaches.
"Reese, right? Man, when Nisha placed that ad, I was gonna kill her, but I think I might have to thank her instead." He winks, which makes Reese laugh. "So, what's on the menu for tonight? Am I being the good boyfriend or the bad boyfriend?"
"Bad boyfriend, please." "Fair warning, my family can be kind of awful. I'm hoping bringing a terrible date will get them off my back for at least a year. So the more obnoxious you can be, the better. Especially to my cousin, Jeffrey." Fucking Jeffrey.
Jack looks faintly amused.
"What did Jeffrey do? Steal your girlfriend? Boyfriend? Kick your dog when no one was looking?"
Ha ha.
Reese braces himself and pulls his right hand out of his pocket. Jack's gaze doesn't shift immediately, but when it does, it fixes on the shiny metal. Reese wiggles the fingers and they respond, albeit slowly.
"I lost the arm when I was little. Accident. This is an experimental prosthetic. Is that going to be a problem?"
It's harder than Reese wants it to be to meet Jack's eyes when Jack shifts his gaze back to Reese's face.
"Not for me, but I'm guessing it is for Jeffrey."
"Yeah, he's just a dick about it every year, and it gets old."
Jack grins like a shark.
"No problem, Cupcake. One obnoxious date coming up with special attention to Cousin Jeffrey. Just one more question, babe."
Jack twirls his keys in his hand.
"My ride or yours?"
Reese grins.
"Definitely yours."
The drive over is a lot less awkward than Reese had thought it might be. At least, it is until Jack mentions his daughter, and Reese apparently loses control of his mouth.
"You have a daughter? Why aren't you with her?" "Wow, I did not mean that the way it sounded. Actually, I kind of did. Wait, ignore me, I'm..."
Jack saves Reese from digging himself any deeper by laughing, hands steady on the steering wheel as he glances at Reese.
Nah, it's cool. She's at her mom's, and ever since I punched my ex's jackass brother in the face, I've been, excused from the big get-togethers. You should have seen the look on his stupid face. Priceless. Wow, so you weren't kidding when you said you could start a fight. Nope, can finish him too. Jack drums his fingers on the wheel as he waits for the light to change. That's up to you, though, Buttercup. Want to have a code word? A hand signal? How about this? Two tugs on the ear and I come out swinging. Reese can't help but laugh at that. I'll keep that in mind. Maybe if things get desperate.
He has to be at least 10 years older than you, Aunt Martha hisses, third glass of wine tilting dangerously in her hand.
At least, Reese agrees peaceably, glancing at Jack, who seemed intent on picking every olive, and only the olives, off the platter on the sideboard.
And you said he was a bartender?
Aunt Martha makes a moo of distaste, as if Reese had suggested that Jack strangled puppies in his spare time.
That's right, sweetheart.
Jack appears as if by magic at Reese's side and slings an arm around Reese's shoulders. Aunt Martha gapes at being called sweetheart, which Reese enjoys maybe a little more than he should.
I make the best white Russians you've ever had. Definitely better than that cheap Chardonnay you're swilling.
Aunt Martha turns red at that. Reese smiles brightly. As promised, Jack is in fine, obnoxious form all evening. He commandeers the remote and puts the Cake Boss marathon on, much to the consternation of Reese's cousins, who usually spend the afternoon watching football and getting drunk. He gives Reese's mother unsolicited turkey advice that sounds suspiciously bad, and couched in barely disguised innuendo, to the point where she orders him out of the kitchen. He argues politics loudly with Uncle Thomas over the main course, and much to Reese's surprise, seems to be winning. He almost does punch Cousin Jeffrey, who makes a crack about Reese's arm like he always does. As usual, no one else seems to care, but Jack gets right up into Jeffrey's space, voice low and threatening, and doesn't back off until Reese puts a hand, the right one, pointedly, on his shoulder. Jeffrey keeps his distance for the rest of the night, which Reese can't help but be grateful for. Over the course of the evening, Jack manages to insult every adult in the house, except Reese. To Reese, he is the promised platonic date, rescuing him from conversations with Aunt Martha, usually with a pointed comment that sends her storming off, and bringing him the last piece of pie from the kitchen. All in all, it's the best Thanksgiving Reese has ever had, and although he's relieved when it's over, he's surprised at the pang he feels when Jack drops him off at his own car and pulls away with a, "See you around, babe." Days turn into weeks, and occasionally, more than occasionally, Reese pulls out his phone and looks at Jack's number. Thinks about calling. Doesn't. It's getting on toward the end of December, and Reese finds himself braving the downtown madness to finish some last-minute Christmas shopping. After a few fruitless and frustrating stops, he ducks into the Hyperion Bar and Grill, newly opened, according to the sign, for a fortifying drink against the cold and the crush of people. He settled in at the bar, pulling out his phone and trying to calculate if shipping costs are going to be too astronomical this late in the month, when a familiar voice washes over him.
Well, well, if it isn't my favorite fake date. How you doing, babe?
Reese looks up, and that's definitely Jack grinning at him from behind the bar, arms folded on the counter. Reese can't quite think of what to say. I thought you worked across town.
I did. Now I'm here.
Jack unfolds himself and spreads his arms wide, taking in the whole restaurant.
You're looking at the new owner of the Hyperion Bar and Grill. Impressive, right?
It is. The place looks nice. Nicer than Reese had really noticed when he walked in. It must have been in the works for months.
You didn't say. Jack shrugged. It wasn't really finalized then. Still some loose ends to tie up. Now, what can I get you, Buttercup? Looks cold out there, he adds, eyeing Reese's heavy winter coat and scarf.
Well, Reese says, a smile starting to curve his lips. I hear you make a pretty good white Russian.
Jack grins back. That I do.
The holidays aren't so bad, Reese thinks, as Jack shoulder checks Cousin Jeffrey on his way back from the kitchen at Christmas dinner. Not with someone like Jack to stand between him and the Aunt Marthas of the world. At the rate Jack is going,
They may even be excused from Easter. Reese couldn't be happier. To be continued. VIP, Part 2 of the RSVP series, written by 36 Save Files, read by Argentum Lupin. 1. White Russian. Jack hadn't been bullshitting him. It really is the best White Russian that Reese has ever had. Reese rolls it around in his mouth, letting the burn of the vodka chase away the chill from outside. Jack's eyes drop to Reese's mouth, and Reese feels like time slows down around him, the already warm air of the bar pressing in on him. Then the door opens, bringing in a gust of cold air and a chattering group of shoppers. Jack's eyes flick to the door, and the moment is broken. Reese shifts his drink on the bar. It was probably his imagination, the way Jack had almost seemed to lean over the counter to him. He was just being friendly. It probably didn't mean anything. So, Reese clears his throat, and Jack's attention shifts back to him. Are you doing anything for Christmas? 2. Mistletoe. The annual family Christmas gathering is, of course, at Aunt Martha's house. Reese had hoped that Jack's performance at Thanksgiving would be enough to get Reese uninvited, but apparently Aunt Martha is made of sterner stuff. Jack doesn't seem to mind making a repeat appearance, though. He is proudly sporting the most hideously ugly Christmas sweater Reese has ever seen, and has taken the opportunity to practice staring holes into Cousin Jeffrey's head. Reese appreciates the gesture. Jack disappears into the kitchen during present unwrapping and returns with 2 cups of coffee. He hands one to Reese, who is about to express his undying gratitude, when there is an ear-piercing shriek from one of the younger cousins.
Mistletoe!
Reese feels every pair of eyes in the room turn to him as Krista points at something over his head with a face-splitting grin.
Now Reese and Jack have to kiss!
With a faint sense of dread, Reese looks up, and sure enough, there is a clump of beribboned red and green hanging from the ceiling. He turns to Jack, ready to tell him they don't have to, really. But Jack is looking at him with something like a challenge in his eyes, and the words die unspoken. Jack leans in slowly, and Reese lets himself wonder, for just a moment, what it would be like if he let this happen, if Jack kissed him in front of everyone. Jack doesn't, though. Jack's lips press warm and dry against Reese's cheek, a chaste touch that is there and gone, and then he's turning back to the room at large with an easy grin as the unwrapping resumes. Reese is unprepared for how cheated he feels. 3. Camaro. The feeling chases Reese for the rest of the day. He's hyper-aware of Jack in a way that he hadn't been before. Every brush of Jack's shoulder against his, every casual touch at the small of his back, every time their fingers touch, these small moments seem imbued with a heavy meaning that Reese can't decipher. Reese catches himself watching Jack for longer than is really appropriate, even, especially, for someone he's only fake dating. Jack looks back, holding Reese's eyes until Reese looks away. By the time they make their escape, Reese can feel the tension humming inside of him. He can't stop thinking about the almost kiss under the mistletoe. Jack had definitely almost kissed him, right? But it was probably a good thing that he hadn't. They weren't really dating. Reese definitely shouldn't be imagining Jack's hands on his shoulders and Jack's lips on his, warm and firm, and...
I think this is your stop, kiddo.
Reese comes back to himself with a jolt. Sure enough, they're back in front of his apartment building, Jack's car idling on the side of the street.
You okay there? You've been awfully quiet since we left.
Jack is eyeing him with something like concern. It's on the tip of Reese's tongue to say no, he is not all right, to demand that Jack stop playing and kiss him for real, damn it. Reese squashes the impulse.
Ha ha, no, I'm fine.
He pastes on a smile that is, judging by Jack's raised eyebrows, not very convincing.
I'm just tired. Thanks again for coming with me. I know it can't have been the most fun way to spend Christmas. No problem, Pumpkin. You call me anytime you need to irritate your relatives.
Reese doesn't know what to say to that. Thank you, I will. So he takes it as his cue to get out of the car. He doesn't want this to be the end of... for this to be the last time he sees Jack, but he can't bear to sit in awkward silence until Jack kicks him out. He's barely opened the door, though, when Jack stops him with a hand on his knee.
I...
Jack clears his throat, and Reese would almost say he looks nervous, except that in the short time Reese has known him, he's never seen Jack look anything of the sort.
I'm having a little get-together at Hyperion on New Year's. You could drop by, you know, if you're not doing anything.
Reese feels something loosen in his chest, and he can't see it, but he knows that the smile he's wearing now is miles more genuine than the one he had on a minute ago.
I'd love to. I'll see you then, all right?
Jack squeezes his knee once and lets go, his own grin wide and relieved.
See you then, Tiger.
Reese gets out of the car and watches Jack drive away, something light and singing in his chest. 4. Champagne. Apparently by a little get-together, Jack had actually meant a full tilt, can hear it halfway down the block, guest list at the door, party. Reese is bemused to find his name on the VIP list, which gets him ushered in past the mile-long line at the bar to one of the circular booths at the back where Jack is animatedly holding court.
So I'm telling him, you can walk out or be carried out, pal, your choice.
Jack looks up as Reese approaches, and maybe it's wishful thinking, but Reese swears Jack's face lights up even more when he catches sight of Reese.
Reese, you made it! Come on, sit down. Let's get you a drink.
He signals the waitress and catches Reese's hand to pull him down into the booth. It's a tight fit, so Reese's thigh is pressed up against Jack's from knee to hip. It's warm in the restaurant, but Jack feels warmer, and Reese relaxes into it. The others in the booth are eyeing Reese with interest, and Jack makes introductions.
This big guy is Wilhelm. You ever need any kneecaps busted, he's your man. Nisha is the dark-haired beauty staring holes in the side of my head. Don't believe anything she says about me.
Wilhelm doesn't turn out to be much for talking, but Nisha, who turns out to be a force of nature, takes to Reese right away, commandeering his phone and entering her number.
We're going to be great friends, I can tell,
she says, and Reese is frankly too overawed by her to object. Wilhelm asks how Reese and Jack know each other, and Jack grins, much to Reese's trepidation.
Oh, you're not going to believe this. Actually, you know me, so you will.
Reese's fears turn out to be unfounded. He actually comes off pretty well in Jack's telling of the story. Jack doesn't dwell on the particulars of Reese's family.
Jackasses, the lot of them.
Instead, focusing on his self-styled heroics.
And then I said that we had an appointment to get matching tattoos and dragged Reese out of there 3 hours early.
He turns to Reese with a smug grin.
Not bad, right, Pumpkin?
My hero. Reese rolls his eyes, but he's smiling. It might be Reese's imagination, but it seems that Jack leans forward the tiniest bit.
Heroes get rewards, don't they?
Jack's still grinning, and Reese can't help the way his eyes drop to Jack's lips. The rest of the bar seems to fall away, and Reese is seconds from closing the gap between them, the hell with what Nisha and Wilhelm think.
Ha! You're no hero, Jack!
Nisha's sharp laugh cuts through the moment. Jack turns away with a pout and a,
"Aw, come on, babe!"
And the conversation devolves into a verbal sparring match between the two of them, filled with inside jokes and references that Reese only half follows. He takes a drink to cover his disappointment, and finds Wilhelm watching him speculatively. It's okay, Reese thinks. He can be patient. Reese can be patient, but New Year's is a long night, and several rounds of drinks means that Reese eventually has to excuse himself to the bathroom. It's as he's making his way back to the table that he sees them. Nisha, with her head bent close to Jack's, saying something that makes Jack throw back his head with laughter, unreserved in a way Reese hasn't seen him before. Jack, with his hand low on Nisha's back. Nisha, leaning in to plant a kiss on Jack's cheek. And it's with a cold wash of realization that Reese sees what's going on. Jack and Nisha are together.
Of course they are. They've been so close all evening, and Jack called her babe.
Reese doesn't know why he didn't see it before. But really, he does know why. He wanted to believe there was something between him and Jack, that they had connected despite the awkwardness of their first meeting and Reese's terrible family. It was why Reese had made excuses to his friends about tonight, why he had come all the way across town for a man that Reese is realizing he actually knows very little about. Reese feels like an idiot. Jack looks up, and his eyes meet Reese's. But Reese has seen enough. Plus one. Fireworks. The air outside stings Reese's face as he leaves Hyperion, but Reese hardly notices. He's too busy cursing himself for an idiot, for having gotten things so wrong. And really, how could he compete with Nisha? She was stunning, smart, and Jack clearly liked her a lot. They looked good together. Jack had done Reese a favor by being his pretend date for the holidays, and maybe there had been some friendly flirting, but that's all it was. Friendly. It was time to get back to reality. Reese pulls out his phone, wondering if he can snag a cab before the post-midnight rush. He'll text Jack something perfunctory about leaving early. Reese will get a cab, he'll go home, and tomorrow will be a new day. A new year. He can put all of this behind him. If he thinks about it one step at a time, he won't have to think about Jack very much at all. So he already has his phone in his hand when it buzzes with an incoming text. Reese looks down, hating the part of him that's still hoping it's from Jack. It's not, though. It's from Nisha.
I think you have the wrong impression.
And then, a few seconds later,
and just so you know, Jack doesn't run after anyone.
Reese is still standing on the sidewalk, staring at the screen, when a strong hand comes down on his shoulder and whirls him around. His protest dies in his throat, because it's Jack who has him by one arm. Jack, who has apparently followed him out into the cold without a jacket. Jack, who is wheezing a little. "Did you run out here?" Reese hears himself say.
"No. Yes. Maybe."
Jack waves one arm, agitated.
"That's not important. What's important is that you stop for 1 second."
"Why?" "Jack doesn't run after anyone," Nisha had said. "But here he is, and he still hasn't let go of Reese."
"Because you've got the wrong idea, okay? Look, I know you saw me and Nisha."
Reese tenses up and tries to pull away, but Jack won't let him.
"And yes, we used to date, but that's over. It's been over for ages."
"You're not dating," Reese repeats carefully.
"No. You and I, though, that could be a different story. If you wanted it to be."
Jack steps closer, and his hand shifts to the back of Reese's neck.
"Why do you think I asked you to come out tonight, kiddo? To be a third wheel?"
"I guess not." Reese can feel himself start to smile as Jack's other hand slips around his waist. Jack huffs.
"He guesses not. You know, I was going to wait until midnight, but I think we're close enough."
Reese can't quite keep up with this conversation.
Close enough for what?
For this.
Jack pulls Reese in, and then finally, Jack's mouth is on his, warm and demanding. Jack kisses like he knows what he's doing, smooth and strong, and with a hint of bite, like he knows exactly what will make Reese weaken the knees. Reese gives as good as he gets, arms coming up to pull Jack even closer, catching Jack's bottom lip in his teeth as Jack groans into his mouth. At first, Reese thinks the thundering in his ears is oxygen deprivation, but as he lifts his mouth from Jack's and reopens his eyes, when did he close them? He hears cheering from inside the restaurant, and the noise resolves itself into fireworks that paint Jack's face red and gold. This close, he can see Jack's mismatched eyes and the faint scar that bisects his face, can feel the rumbling in Jack's chest as he chuckles.
"See? Told you it was close enough."
He winks, and obviously the only proper response to that is for Reese to pull him back in and shut Jack's mouth with his own. It's well after midnight before they make it back into the party, but the way Reese figures it, they're just making up for lost time. To be continued. Vertical Expression, Part 3 of the RSVP series. Written by 36 Save Files. Read by Argentum Lupin. Weddings aren't really Jack's thing. His own marriage had ended disastrously enough that he's pretty cynical about showing up for the start of anyone else's, especially if they expect him to bring a gift. But Reese had already RSVP'd for two, and now his friend Yvette has a suspiciously timed scheduling conflict and, well, Jack's relationship with Reese, their real relationship, is still new enough that he's reluctant to deny Reese anything, especially when Reese sounds so woeful about going alone. It's not like people won't expect to see them together. And it's not bad. The ceremony is short, thank God. The dinner that follows is decent, and the bar is open. Jack approves. He also approves of the way Reese's fitted suit clings to his body, accentuating the lines of his hips and legs. In fact, he's so distracted by the pull of the fabric across Reese's thighs that he makes only a half-hearted protest when Reese pulls him to the dance floor. Once he's there, though, he might as well make the best of it. And what better opportunity to put his hands all over Reese in public? Some people resist being led. Jack knows he's one of them. But Reese takes to it like he's known Jack all his life, like he can read Jack's mind. And okay, maybe Jack's showing off a little, spinning Reese around and even dipping him in front of everyone, but Reese is laughing, and Jack finds that he is too. At least he is until the music changes and the tempo turns slow and steady. People around them are coupling up, and those dancing by themselves are suddenly struck by the urge to get another drink. Jack feels Reese still and draw a little away. Reese's face has gone shuttered and anxious, and when he opens his mouth, Jack just knows he's going to offer Jack some excuse, some way out. That he suddenly feels like he's asking for too much, like he's unsure of Jack. To hell with that. Jack pulls Reese further in against him until he can feel Reese's expensive shirt brushing against his.
"We can go if you want, babe,"
he says, low and private, just for the two of them.
"But don't you dare stop on my account."
He slides his right hand around to Reese's back and takes Reese's right hand in his left and, oh, Reese is staring at where Jack's hand is holding Reese's metal one, and Jack feels like an idiot. He holds Reese's hand more firmly, even though he's not sure how well Reese can feel it, and splays the fingers of his other hand on Reese's back. He noses into Reese's hairline, murmuring,
"I mean it. Tell me you want to stop and we'll stop. But don't let those jackasses get in the way of a good time."
He starts them moving slowly, just swaying in place, really, and finally, finally, Reese relaxes in his arms. He picks up the pace, and Reese moves with him, fitting himself against Jack like he belongs there. Jack could get used to that. Jack's hand drifts down Reese's back, but because he is a gentleman, or at least he's trying to be, he does not move it further down to grope Reese's ass, instead settling on the small of his back. Reese sighs and leans in, letting Jack move them in small circles on the dance floor. Jack's not normally one for slow songs, but this one goes by too quickly, and before Jack's ready to let go, the beat speeds back up and the dance floor starts getting crowded again. Reese brushes his lips against Jack's, the lightest there-and-gone touch, and says simply, "Thank you." Then Reese is pulling back, cheeks flushed more than the dancing can account for. Jack lets him slip away reluctantly, but Reese doesn't go far, sliding his hands down Jack's arms.
"What do you say we get out of here?"
Reese says, ducking his head to look at Jack coyly through his lashes. Jack feels a grin split his face.
"Lead the way, pumpkin."
And as Reese tows him off the dance floor, Jack thinks that weddings aren't so bad when they end like this. To be continued. Table for Two. Part 4 of the RSVP series. Written by 36 Save Files. Read by Argentum Lupin. "Whiskey neat. You know what I like." Nisha seats herself at the bar right in front of where Jack is shelving glasses. He has people for this now, but he likes to keep his hand in, keep an eye on how things are running on the ground in the restaurant. "So do you have plans for the big day?" Jack leaves the last glass on the countertop and reaches under the bar for the bottle he keeps for special occasions.
"Of course I do," he scoffs as he pours. "We've got a special menu planned, a string quartet, and I bought out the florist down the street. The tables are booked solid. I've got this sweetness."
He turns around to hand Nisha her drink, and only then does he notice the disapproval writ clear on her face.
"What, you think the string quartet is too much? It's Valentine's Day. People eat that shit up."
"Jack," Nisha says, very slowly and clearly, as if explaining something to a small child. "I meant, what are your plans with Reese?" The "you dumbass" is unspoken but clearly implied.
Jack freezes.
"Oh my God, you don't have plans!" Nisha rolls her eyes and tosses back her drink. "You are such an idiot, I swear!" Jack is not panicking. He can fix this.
"I can fix this."
Nisha looks skeptical. "How? It's February 10th. You just told me your own restaurant was booked solid. What do you think the rest of town's going to be like?"
Maybe he doesn't care about that stuff. Flowers and dinner and all that.
Jack is not panicking. Nisha raises an eyebrow. "Are you willing to risk it?" Jack isn't. 1 hour, one brainstorming session, and several purchases later, thank God for the internet, Jack feels like he's got a handle on this. "Give me that list," Nisha says, grabbing it out of his hands and scribbling something on the bottom. "You forgot something."
I already told you skywriting is too much. I want to hit the classics, not scare him off.
Nisha snorts at that, which Jack magnanimously ignores. Jack leans over the counter, but he knows better than to grab something out of Nisha's hands before she's finished with it.
What did I miss?
Nisha shows him.
Jack drops his head in his hands. Nisha, no.
I'm telling you, this is a classic.
Nisha shoves the paper back in his hands, where she's written lingerie at the bottom of his very reasonable Valentine's Day checklist, and circled it 3 times.
It's not any worse than what you've already set up, and don't tell me you don't want to see those long legs and something lacy.
I just said I'm trying not to scare him off, Jack grits out.
He doesn't answer the other part. There's no point, Nisha knows him too well.
If you're not helping, you can leave.
This is helping. Nisha pulls out her phone, and Jack doesn't catch on to what she's doing until it's far too late. He swears and makes a desperate grab for the phone. He values his fingers, he really does, but desperate times and all that. But she holds it just out of reach until she's finished texting. Jack finally grabs it away from her, but when he checks the screen, he can see that the damage is done. Sure enough, a few seconds later, there's a buzzing from his own phone. Incoming call, Reese. With a sinking feeling, Jack accepts the call.
Hey, Pumpkin, how's it going?
Maybe he can salvage this.
Should I be concerned that your ex-girlfriend is asking for my measurements?
Reese sounds more bemused than angry, at the very least.
Jack tries for a chuckle, but it comes out weak.
Oh, you know Nisha, such a joker.
Jack catches her eye and draws his finger across his throat. You're dead. But Nisha doesn't seem fazed by this very serious threat and just folds her hands underneath her chin, waiting.
Reese says, Then there's silence on the line. Jack, because he may be panicking just a little, tries to fill it.
So, the 14th, you and me, dinner here at Hyperion. How does that sound? Sounds great, right? I think so. Does 7:30 work for you?
Reese makes a small considering noise.
Is that what this is about?
What I'm about is trying to make a date with my boyfriend.
Jack stumbles over the word, but he recovers.
With you. So you'll be here?
Reese's voice is warm on the line, and Jack can tell he's smiling.
I'll be there. I've got to run, Jack. I'll talk to you soon.
Sure thing, Cupcake.
It's only as he's thumbing the call off that Jack realizes he's smiling, too. Nisha rolls her eyes at him again, if possible harder than before, and rescues her phone from where Jack's dropped it on the counter. It buzzes faintly, but she ignores it as she tucks it back in her pocket. He's far too good for you. You know that, right?
Yeah, Jack thinks, looking down at his phone. I know.
Running a restaurant means Jack is always busy, and this is especially true on a holiday. There are last-minute details to arrange, staff to yell at, and an extra table to work into the seating arrangements, because Jack wants to make Reese happy, but he is not going to risk his burgeoning reputation by canceling one of his reservations for Valentine's Day of all days. So, cancel, no. Squish into a corner, yes. He's maneuvering the last table into position himself when his phone vibrates in his pocket. He checks it, and it's a confirmation for the first delivery he sent to Reese's apartment. Excellent. He's really pulled this one off well, if he does say so himself. He gets 2 more notifications over the course of the afternoon, but it isn't until he's ducking into the back to freshen up for opening that he realizes he hasn't heard a word from Reese. His hands slow as he adjusts his collar. Huh. Maybe Reese has been out all day? But all the deliveries needed to be signed for, so...
Jack shakes himself. It doesn't matter. Reese will be here in a few short hours, and he probably wants to thank Jack in person for the thoughtful gifts.
Jack grins at himself in the mirror.
Nailed it.
Reese arrives at Hyperion at exactly 7:25 p.m., and Jack is busy, but not too busy to notice his entrance. He does, after all, have people for this now. In a room full of people dressed to impress, Reese still turns heads, and Jack preens a little when Reese's face lights up as Jack approaches. Jack slides a hand along Reese's hip and underneath the tailored jacket just because he can, and to feel the way Reese leans into it.
Ready for dinner, babe?
Jack settles his hand on the small of Reese's back. He still gets a thrill out of this, the way Reese goes compliant at a touch from Jack.
I could eat,
Reese says, relaxed and easy. His nose and cheeks are still red from the cold outside, and Jack resists the urge to kiss them.
I hope so, because the chef's really outdone himself this time.
Jack uses the hand he's got on Reese to guide him to their table, and Reese lets himself be steered.
Dinner is delicious. Of course it is. Jack doesn't hire anyone less than the best.
But Jack hardly tastes it because he's waiting for Reese to say something about what Jack sent him. Appetizers and entrees come and go, however, and Reese chats about his day and laughs at Jack's jokes and doesn't say a single word about the packages Jack knows he got. Their server clears the dessert plates, and as she's leaving, Jack decides that he can't take it anymore.
So, anything interesting in the mail today, Buttercup? Any surprises?
He's so transparent, he can barely stand it, but he has to know what Reese thinks. Reese hums and taps a finger on his lips, looking off to the side.
Let's see, there was a grocery ad, a couple catalogs.
Jack frowns. Did he get the wrong address?
Oh, and there was a lovely flower delivery, roses and lilies, very nice, very classic.
Jack smiles and leans back in his chair, picking up his glass. This is more like it.
To which I am very allergic.
Jack chokes on his drink.
Reese carries on as if he hasn't noticed.
There was also the color-coordinated balloon bouquet. Interesting choice to have "Damn, you're fine" printed on them.
Okay, that had seemed a lot funnier when he'd arranged it.
Reese snaps his fingers as if he's just remembered something. Or maybe you're referring to the bouquet of plush kittens.
You like cats, Jack tries. This isn't quite going the way he planned.
I do like cats, Reese replies gravely, but his eyes are laughing at Jack. I like them more when they're not on stems.
All right, no more kitten bouquets, Jack grouses.
Reese continues. And they were all signed from the handsomest guy you know, so naturally I assume they were from Vaughn.
Ha ha. Jack is sweating, just a little.
Are you saying you didn't like any of it?
I didn't say that.
Reese props his elbows on the table.
I am impressed that you managed to pull it off all by yourself.
Nisha helped, Jack admits sheepishly.
And apparently neither of you know the meaning of the word restraint,
Reese says, but he's smiling genuinely now, and Jack feels the tightness in his chest loosen.
Hey, I can be restrained. I restrain myself all the time. You should have seen what she wanted me to get you.
Jack is interrupted by their server returning with the worst possible timing, and who is carrying a smartly wrapped box that she deposits in front of Reese with a, "This was left for you, sir."
Reese laughs. More, Jack? You shouldn't have.
I didn't, Jack mutters. He has a sinking feeling that he knows exactly what's inside that box, and who it came from.
For a split second, he wonders if he can get away with snatching it out of Reese's hands, but Reese is already opening the top.
Oh. Reese's face goes blank in surprise, then... Ah, measurements.
Jack has to look, and as he tips the box toward himself, his worst fears are confirmed.
Inside the tastefully wrapped box, nestled inside crisp tissue paper, is a set of very sleek, very expensive, very feminine undergarments.
Jack drops his head in his hands and groans.
I'm going to kill her.
That's if Reese doesn't kill him first.
You remember what I said about restraint?
Incredibly, Reese doesn't sound angry. In fact, he sounds like he might be about to laugh. Maybe Jack can play this off as a harmless prank.
I'm going to get a restraining order.
Jack peeks through his fingers at Reese. You know those are a joke, right?
He hopes he sounds convincing.
Reese lifts the top piece slightly out of the box, letting the silky fabric pool and slip through his fingers. It's more distracting than it should be.
What, you don't think I have the shoulders for it?
Jack blinks. That is not how he thought this conversation was going to go.
I mean, here it is, literally gift-wrapped.
Reese continues, lifting his eyes to meet Jack's. He's nervous, Jack can see it, but he's not joking. There's a challenge there, daring Jack to say the wrong, or possibly the right, thing, and Jack loves that about Reese, how he pushes back when Jack least expects him to.
And he's not about to turn down a golden opportunity like this.
Jack drops his hands.
Well, when you put it like that,
It would be criminal, really, to let them go to waste. And if we're being honest, Honey Bear, he drawls, leaning forward, it's not your shoulders I'm thinking about in those things.
Reese matches Jack grin for grin, and Jack is struck again by the realization of how lucky he is to have this for as long as he can hold on to it. Jack doesn't believe in karma, can't if he wants to sleep at night, and he's glad he doesn't because there's no way he deserves to have Reese sitting across from him smiling over a box of lingerie that Jack's ex-girlfriend left for him. It makes Jack want to drag Reese into the back and blow him right then and there, but Jack can be patient when he needs to be. Reese fits the lid back on the box. His hands slide over the top, one metal, one smooth. And now he does look uncertain, and for a second Jack wonders if he said the wrong thing, if he pushed too far, if he can take it back. But Reese surprises him again when he says, I got you something too. Reese digs a key out of his pocket and extends it toward Jack. I had this made for you. It's no kitten bouquet. Reese raises an eyebrow, and Jack knows he's going to be living that down for a long time. But I figured you could, you know, use it at my place if you wanted to. Reese bites his lip, and it's adorable. Jack's fingers close over the key in Reese's hand almost before Jack realizes he's reached for it. He weighs it in his hand for a minute. It feels heavier than it looks. It feels like a promise. Then the moment passes, and it's just a key. Jack tucks it into his pocket and catches Reese's hand across the table. Thanks, babe. I promise not to use it for evil. No promises on not swapping out all your underwear, though. Reese smiles indulgently at him, fingers a warm weight against Jack's. Oh, Jack, you have no idea what's in my underwear drawer. And for that, Jack has to tug him across the tiny table to kiss him, Reese smiling into Jack's mouth the whole time. Jack would like nothing more than to drag Reese immediately home after dinner, but this is a big night for the restaurant, and he has responsibilities. He leaves Reese at the door with a promise to come over later that night, and Reese leaves him with a kiss that has Jack ready to delegate as much as possible. Even so, Jack ends up staying at Hyperion later than he really wants to, but when he pulls up to the front of Reese's place, he can see from the street that the lights are still on. He uses his brand new key to let himself in. He's been to Reese's place before, but it's new and thrilling letting himself into Reese's space. Reese's space is currently dominated by the damn you're fine balloons, and Jack spots the infamous kitten bouquet on the couch. Seeing it in person, Jack can admit to himself that maybe he went the tiniest bit over the top. Reese, he calls, shrugging off his jacket. Sure, Reese gave him a key, but it doesn't hurt to be polite. In here, comes the answer, and the answer is coming from the bedroom. Jack grins, strapping his jacket on the kittens as he passes. It's been a long day, but when he gets to the bedroom doorway, the fatigue falls away in a rush. Reese looks like a mile of legs, just like Jack knew he would. A short robe frames his pale chest, but beneath it, Jack can just see the smooth black panties and the garter belt hugging Reese's hips. Sheer stockings with a single seam down the back encase his long, long legs all the way down to a pair of glossy, high heels with a delicate strap around the ankle. Reese looks like a wet dream come to life. Jack wants to wreck him. Reese has a couple of wine glasses and an expensive-looking bottle in front of him on the dresser. One of the glasses is almost empty. Reese has clearly started without him. And as Jack watches, Reese picks up the wine and starts to pour a second glass. He's pouring it left-handed, and as he turns, the sleeve on his right side flutters emptily. Did you get everything taken care of? Reese asks. Says Jack intelligently. This makes Reese smile, slow and promising, and he positively sways as he comes over. Jack accepts the glass, but his eyes never leave Reese. Jack clears his throat and tries again. Those shoes weren't in the box. No. Reese says easily. The heels are mine. That goes straight to Jack's dick, and he sets the glass aside and crowds Reese back against the dresser. The wine looks good, but he'd rather chase the taste of it on Reese's tongue, to have him humming and pressing himself against Jack. Reese is taller than usual in his heels, and it's a new experience for Jack to angle his head up for a kiss, but it's totally worth it for the way Reese sighs into his mouth. While he's got Reese's mouth occupied, Jack pushes the robe off his shoulders, right hand following it down Reese's arm. Reese breaks away with a gasp, and Jack takes the opportunity to bite down on the side of Reese's neck as payback for that shoulders comment earlier. Reese shudders gratifyingly against him, hand clenching on Jack's side. Jack nips underneath Reese's ear just to feel him shake again. There's so much Jack wants here. He wants his hands on those pretty stockings. He wants Reese writhing on his dick. He wants to make Reese scream. Jack wants to take Reese apart with his hands and mouth and leave nothing behind that isn't his name pressed into Reese's skin. Jack knows what he wants first, though. His hands drag down Reese's sides as Jack lowers himself to his knees, letting his fingers catch on the garter belt and panties in turn. He runs his fingertips along the top of Reese's stockings as he nuzzles against Reese's erection, already stiff and leaking, straining against the silky underwear. Jack rolls his eyes up to look at Reese's face. Already hard for me, huh, baby? Reese nods frantically, eyes wide and cheeks flushed. Reese is biting his lip again, and Jack is pretty sure he doesn't even know he's doing it. You've been thinking about this? Because I've been waiting to get my mouth on you all night. Jack licks Reese through the fabric, and Reese's mouth drops open with a small choked sound. Jack hooks his fingers in the top of Reese's panties and pulls, grinning at the way Reese's cock springs free when he gets them past Reese's hips. Jack slides the underwear slowly down Reese's legs, and Reese steps delicately out of them when Jack reaches the floor, hand braced on Jack's shoulder for balance. Now that he's got Reese, or rather Reese's dick, right where he wants him, Jack starts by licking broad, flat strokes from base to tip. He swirls his tongue around the head for the way it makes Reese groan, and shifts his hands to Reese's hips to hold him steady as Jack works him deeper down his throat. Reese leans heavily against the dresser, and his hand comes up to pet hesitantly at Jack's hair. Jack hums gently around his cock to encourage him, and Reese bites back a curse as his hips stutter. That's more than enough incentive to keep doing it, in Jack's opinion, so he does it again, and Reese's hand fists in his hair. Reese is too polite to thrust into Jack's mouth, but Jack can tell he's close from the way his breath hisses between his teeth and the way his muscles jump underneath Jack's hands. He's so pretty like this, flushed and wanting, but Jack wants to see Reese come apart for him, wants to see him shake. Jack hollows out his cheeks, pressing his tongue hard against the underside of the head, and just like that, Reese's whole body goes tense and he comes with a strangled noise. Jack swallows him down, throat working as he coaxes Reese through the aftershocks, and then Reese's hand is tugging in his hair, pulling him up. Jack follows, ignoring the way his knees protest, and Reese meets him with a sloppy but enthusiastic kiss, licking the taste of himself out of Jack's mouth. "Damn," Reese says with feeling when he pulls away. "Quite the performance, handsome." "Oh, sweetheart," Jack purrs as he pulls Reese around and walks him backward toward the bed. "I am nowhere near done with you yet." Jack pushes, and Reese goes down in a pile of limbs in a faint squawk. Jack follows closely after, shedding shirt and pants and shoes. Reese props himself up on his elbow as Jack slides a hand up Reese's thigh and hooks a finger underneath one of the garter straps. "Those come off," Reese says, sitting up and fumbling for the clip, but Jack grabs his wrist and presses it back down onto the bed. "Nuh-uh, sweet thing." Jack grins down at Reese and snaps the strap against his thigh. Reese's dick definitely jumps at that, and Jack's own stiffens further at the little surprised noise Reese makes. "Those stay on." Jack encourages Reese to turn over with hands on his hips, and Reese goes willingly, propping himself up on his knees and resting his head on his arm. Jack can't resist snapping another strap against the back of Reese's thigh, and Reese's whole body jerks this time, the noise he makes muffled by the bedspread. Jack runs his hands up Reese's thighs, palming the curve of his ass. "God, you look so good like this, all wrapped up for me." Reese shivers as Jack spreads his cheeks and rubs the thumb over his hole. It slips in with hardly any resistance, and Jack raises an eyebrow. "Did you?" Reese shifts to shoot Jack a sly look over his shoulder. "You were taking too long in Hyperion, so I started early." Jack replaces his thumb with a finger, and sure enough, Reese is already loose and slick. Jack adds a second finger, then a third, and Reese rocks himself back on Jack's hand with a little hum and closes his eyes. "Pretended it was you. This is better, though."
Jesus Christ, Pumpkin, you're gonna kill me, Jack gasps out. He can picture it vividly. Reese slicking up his own fingers and carefully stretching himself, thinking about Jack. Did he bend himself over the dresser or use the bed? Did he moan out Jack's name when he did it? One day soon, Jack's going to ask for a repeat performance, but his dick is so hard it hurts and he needs to be inside of Reese right now. He pulls his fingers out and wipes them hastily on the bedspread, then lines himself up against Reese and pushes in. The feeling of Reese warm and tight around his cock pulls a groan deep out of his chest, and Reese moans prettily in answer. Jack stills for a moment when his hips are flush with Reese's ass, which is apparently too long for Reese because he shoves his hips back with a muttered, "Come on already!" Jack laughs, impatient. He slaps Reese on the flank, and Reese yelps. "I like that." Jack pulls back and thrusts into Reese, setting a slow but steady rhythm. Jack wants to take his time with this, to make it last. But it's hard to remember that when every thrust is driving breathy little moans out of Reese, and he buries his face in his arm to try to smother the sounds. "None of that now, Pumpkin." Jack tightens his grip on Reese's hips and adjusts his angle, aiming for Reese's prostate. "I want to hear you." He knows he's successful when the next couple of thrusts tear a muffled wail out of Reese. Jack grins. "That's more like it." He picks up the pace, wanting more of those sounds, telling Reese how good he is, words tripping over each other as he gets closer to the edge. "So good, baby, so good, just for me, isn't that right? This is..." Jack's hips snap forward. "Just for me." Reese groans into the bedspread. "Yes, Jack, just for you, He cuts off as Jack gets a hand around his dick and starts stroking in counter time to his thrust. "Fuck, yes, anything for you, Jack, just don't fucking stop," Reese sobs out. "I've got you, kitten." Jack's voice sounds low and rough even to his own ears. Jack has no intention of stopping, not when Reese sounds like he's 2 seconds away from begging. Although that is an interesting thought and one Jack wants to come back to later. He knees Reese's legs a little wider apart and molds himself to Reese's back, bearing him down to the mattress. Pressed against him like this, he can feel every little tremor that racks Reese's body as Jack pushes into him again. And Jack is close. He is so close. Nosing in against Reese's hairline, Jack bites down hard on the back of Reese's neck, and Reese screams. His body clenches down around Jack, and Jack manages a few more desperate thrusts before his orgasm catches up to him and he follows Reese over the edge. When he comes back to himself, he's still partially draped over Reese's back, both of them breathing hard. The bite mark he left on Reese's neck is going to be one hell of a bruise, and Jack brushes his lips over it in apology. Reese makes a happy, contented noise, and Jack figures he can't be in too much trouble. Much as Jack would like to crawl under the covers and immediately go to sleep, Reese still has to be divested of his shoes and what's left of the lingerie. Jack can't complain too much about another excuse to put his hands all over Reese, but it's calmer, less urgent, as he slips off the shoes and rolls the stockings down his legs. Reese makes encouraging but tired noises at him, and perks up just enough to maneuver himself under the covers. He rolls toward Jack as Jack slips into the bed next to him. "I appreciate the gesture, I really do, but you know you didn't have to do all that, right? The flowers and the balloons and the everything." Reese looks and sounds thoroughly well-fucked, which Jack can't help but take pride in. His voice is sleepy and his eyes are half-closed, but he's still watching Jack from underneath those long lashes. Jack leans over to kiss him, because what else is he supposed to do? "Didn't want you to think I was slacking." Reese huffs a laugh at that, and his eyes slip all the way shut. Jack waits, but that appears to be all that Reese is going to contribute for now. Which is fine. Jack is fine avoiding the feelings conversation. Jack turns and reaches for the light switch, then settles down next to Reese. He can't quite let it go, though, and some things are easier said in the dark. "I just want to get this right," Jack says quietly into the space between them. Even though Jack literally had his dick in Reese not 10 minutes ago, this feels more intimate. He's pretty sure Reese is asleep, or close to it, so he's not expecting it when Reese's hand finds his in the dark. Their fingers tangle, and Reese brings their hands up to his mouth. "You can stop worrying." Jack can just barely see in the dim light, but he feels it vividly when Reese presses a chaste kiss to Jack's fingers. "You're getting this right." To be continued.
The Favor of Your Reply, Part 5 of the RSVP series, written by 36 Save Files, read by Argentum Lupin.
So you're the Hyperion boy toy, Sasha says, hands on her hips, evaluation clear on her face. Jack is pretty sure he's never been called boy toy in his life, but somehow he thinks he's not going to start anything with her. Not now, anyway. He and Reese have just walked in the door. Discretion seems like the better part of valor, but Jack reserves the right to change his mind. Fiona, who is Sasha's sister if Jack remembers the introductions correctly, leans an arm on Sasha's shoulder. And the kitten bouquet guy, don't forget that. Yvette joins them from the kitchen, drink in hand and heels clacking. She looks Jack up and down, and he straightens despite himself.
He's the good dancer, though, right?
And he threatened to punch Jeffrey in the face, Vaughn says, one hand on his chin. Not bad for a random guy off the internet.
The other three turn to look at Vaughn, who drops his hand from his face.
What, don't you know how they met?
At the chorus of resounding no's, Vaughn breaks into a grin.
Oh man, this is gonna be good.
Sorry, bro, he says to Reese, not sounding very sorry at all.
Next to Jack, Reese has folded his arms and put one hand over his eyes, but he's smiling, if ruefully.
No, no, of course. Why not tell everyone?
He drops his hand from his eyes and pokes Vaughn in the shoulder.
Although it was really your fault.
Huh, that's right, it was.
Vaughn rubs his hands together, catching Jack's eye for a second before turning back to Fiona, Sasha, and Yvette, who are looking impatient.
Okay, so it's a week before Thanksgiving and there's this ad, right?
When Reese had asked if he wanted to go to Vaughn's birthday get-together, Jack's first question had been,
who's Vaughn?
Fortunately, he caught himself just in time, and good thing too, because Vaughn, he was Reese's best friend, of course. Jack had realized with a faint sense of guilt that he hardly knew anything about Reese's friends. Reese talked about them, sure, but Jack hadn't actually met them in the months they'd been dating. So Jack can't exactly turn this invitation down.
It's okay, they'll love him. Jack's awesome, just ask anyone.
Reese certainly seems to think so, and Reese has excellent taste. Only they don't seem to love him, not initially. When he walks into the house, he's immediately fielding a barrage of evaluative and, although this could be paranoia, slightly judgy statements. Reese tells us you've been married before. Running a restaurant must keep you busy, not a lot of free time.
How did you take over ownership of Hyperion, anyway?
He half expects someone to ask him what his intentions toward Reese are. Fortunately, it doesn't quite come to that, although Sasha does corner him in the kitchen with a series of pointed questions that seem to be leading up to asking if Jack is a serial killer. He's about to say something that will really get him in trouble when Reese rescues him, latching onto Jack's elbow with a, "Sorry, Sasha, I need to borrow him for a minute." Borrow apparently means tow outside to the patio, where Reese pulls two bottles out of the cooler. He pops the tops off both with the heel of his metal hand and hands one to Jack, who raises his eyebrows.
That's a neat party trick, Jack says, accepting his soda. Haven't seen you do that before.
Reese shrugs and flexes the fingers of his right hand.
This thing comes in handy sometimes.
Then he waves the hand, grinning.
Get it? Handy?
Jack rolls his eyes, but he's smiling.
That's terrible. That's like my level of joke. Come on, pumpkin, you're better than that.
Reese cocks his head at that, and Jack replays what he just said and winces a little internally. He hadn't meant to imply, it's not that he thinks Reese is too good for him. Of course not. Jack is impressive in every way. It's just that, sure, Jack has gotten his life together and he's on a roll now, but he hasn't always been. And Reese is, well, he's Reese, with his MBA and his expensive clothes and his friends who are treating Jack with something just this side of suspicion. As if he can read Jack's mind, Reese asks, how are you doing in there? I know they can be... Reese pauses and searches for the right phrase. A little much.
I'm fine. Of course I'm fine.
Jack buys himself time by taking a drink.
Are you sure the Inquisition isn't missing a few members, though? Especially Sasha. Wouldn't be surprised if she's heating up the irons while we're out here.
Reese laughs and ducks his head. Yeah, they can be overprotective. I haven't always had such good luck with boyfriends, you know. He says, eyeing Jack from underneath his lashes. It's a nice change. And, there's that word, boyfriend. Jack has trouble saying it, and he knows Reese has noticed, but Reese hasn't pushed him, which makes Jack feel simultaneously extremely lucky and like a piece of shit.
He likes Reese a lot. In fact, he tries not to think about how much he likes Reese, how all Reese has to do is ask, and Jack will tell him yes. Jack puts on an exaggerated grin, the kind he knows makes Reese laugh, and sweeps a half bow from the waist. We aim to please, sweetheart. We aim to please. Reese does indeed laugh at that, and that appears to be enough to get Jack past whatever this moment is. When they return to the party, Sasha has not, in fact, produced any torture instruments, and Jack had been kidding about that anyway. Mostly. It's funny. He had no problem running the gauntlet of Reese's family. That had been kind of fun, actually. Here, though, in this place where Reese is clearly at ease, head thrown back and laughing in a way that Jack is finding increasingly addictive, here among the people Reese chooses to call home, Jack finds himself trying in a way he hasn't for anyone besides Angel in a long time. It seems to be working, at least a little bit. Jack is pretty sure he has Vaughn on his side for the whole willing-to-punch-Jeffrey thing, and Yvette seems to be warming up to him after he mixes her his version of a mint julep. The secret is to thoroughly muddle the mint leaves and hit it with a shot of club soda. Fiona and Sasha seem to be still on the fence, and for all that Sasha is the more outwardly hostile, Jack thinks Fiona is the one he has to convince. As the evening draws on, the conversation briefly, mercifully, turns to Sasha's love life instead of Reese's. Apparently, she's just dumped her latest fling, or at least that's what she announces when Vaughn asks how her boyfriend is. August was never my boyfriend, she says, rolling her eyes. He was just someone I saw for a while. Hmm, says Yvette, her gaze sliding over to Jack, and he's only known her for a few hours, but he can tell exactly what she's thinking and almost rolls his eyes himself. And okay, maybe he hasn't said that word to Reese, but it's not like Reese doesn't know, right? Jack cuts a look over to Reese, who is studiously examining his drink. Jack is suddenly a lot less sure of himself. Shame when people don't live up to the hype, don't you think, Jack? Fiona's tone is playful, but her eyes are cool. Fee, says Reese sharply, and Jack has had just about enough of this. This August guy sounds like a schmuck. Jack puts down his bottle with a thump, drawing the attention of the group. I hear you loud and clear, Fiona, but obviously you don't know who you're dealing with, so let me clear something up for you right now. Fiona and Sasha look skeptical, and Yvette raises an eyebrow. Vaughn shoots a worried look at Reese, who is looking back at Jack with a neutral, waiting expression. I'm the Hyperion-owning, kitten-bearing, cousin-punching boyfriend. Jack slings his arm around Reese's shoulders and leans in close. And I'm here to stay. Isn't that right, babe? Reese's eyes are warm, like his voice. Damn right. He grabs Jack by the collar and pulls him in, kissing him hard, as if they're not standing front and center in a circle of Reese's closest friends. The kind of friends who, apparently, are not above wolf whistles and obnoxious clapping at this very public display of affection. Jack can feel Reese's smile on his lips, and when Reese lets him go, Jack can see it, wide and brilliant, and enough to make every minute of the evening worth it. Jack has no regrets. To be continued. Mise en place. Part 6 of the RSVP series. Written by 36 Save Files. Read by Argentum Lupin. Reese had kind of thought that after he gave Jack a key to his apartment, Jack would reciprocate and have one made for him. Jack doesn't. Jack makes use of the key Reese gave him, and Reese continues to spend the occasional night at Jack's place. But when he does, Jack unlocks the door and locks up behind them, and never quite looks at Reese while he does it. It's all right, though. The whole concept of a relationship longer than a few months seems to have caught Jack off guard, and Reese doesn't want to push him. To be honest, it's caught Reese a little off guard as well. Not the idea of a relationship, but this relationship, the way being with Jack is so easy. Jack had had a hard enough time just saying the word boyfriend out loud, although he had never given Reese a reason to doubt him. Reese had waited for that one, and he can wait for this one, too. He's finding that if he gives Jack the space he needs, Jack will come to him. Jack is worth the wait. So when Reese comes home on a Friday in the hottest part of August to a building with broken air conditioning, Reese doesn't think to say anything. His apartment manager is very apologetic. The defunct parts are backordered, and she can't promise him when they'll come in, but it shouldn't be more than a few days, a week at most. Reese sighs, but he can handle a few days in the heat. At least it's the weekend.
Of course, the weekend means no escape to his air-conditioned office, and Rhys doesn't realize how much he misses that precious cold air until he doesn't have it anymore. Even with the windows open to catch any stray cross breezes, the air presses in against Rhys, muggy and warm. He could head somewhere cooler, a coffee shop, a movie theater, even Jack's place. But that would mean getting up from where he is now, stretched out on the couch in his boxers, and the heat is making him sluggish. He has nowhere to be for once. Staying where he is and letting the soft lethargy wash over him sounds much better. Rhys is startled out of a light doze by his phone buzzing on the end table. He makes a couple of half-hearted grabs at it, but it remains stubbornly out of reach, and he lets it go until it stops buzzing. If it's important, whoever it was will call back. They don't, and Rhys congratulates himself on this conservation of effort, closing his eyes again. The next time he opens them, it's to the sound of a key turning in the lock. Rhys cranes his head back to look at the front door, which swings open to reveal Jack, and Rhys is never telling anyone how just the sight of him makes Rhys's heart beat a little faster.
Hey, a cupcake!
Jack shuts the door and comes around to blatantly look Rhys up and down, stretched out on the couch, in only his boxers, Rhys is suddenly reminded. Jack grins.
Is this for me?
Funny. Rhys props himself up on his elbow, the faint beginnings of guilt stirring in his stomach. Did we have plans? Because if so, I totally forgot.
Nah. Jack waves a hand. I just thought I'd come over. I did call, he adds, with a look at Rhys's phone.
Ah.
Rhys lets himself fall back to the couch. It was too far away. I can see that, Jack says, dry as the desert. Shut up, it's too hot for moving. Yeah, didn't realize you were recreating the ninth circle in here.
Jack puts his hands on his hips.
What, are you trying to get heat stroke? Angling to call in sick next week?
Ha ha, the AC's out in the whole building. Rhys stretches, noting with a touch of smugness the way Jack's eyes fix on the lines of his body. I'm stuck like this for the next few days.
Can't say I mind the view.
Jack moves toward him, leaning down to capture Rhys's lips in a slow kiss that Rhys returns lazily.
Hi,
Jack says when he pulls back.
Hi yourself,
says Rhys, smiling, and this makes Jack smile back, not the confident grin he puts on for the world, but a smaller, more real thing that he wears just for Rhys. At the sight of it, Rhys has to kiss him again, so he fists his hands in Jack's shirt and pulls. Jack comes down willingly, settling on one knee next to the couch. While their mouths are occupied, Jack skims his fingertips down Rhys's chest and over his stomach. Rhys shivers despite himself, but when Jack's fingers dip just below the waistband of his boxers, Rhys breaks away with an exasperated noise.
Oh, come on, you'll make me all sweaty,
Rhys complains half-heartedly, but his hand is still clenched in Jack's shirt. Even to his own ears, Rhys doesn't sound very convincing, especially when Jack pulls his fingers away and Rhys sighs.
You're already sweaty.
Jack captures Rhys's hand with one of his own and uses the other to palm Rhys through his boxers. Rhys's head falls back on a gasp and he arches into Jack's hands, dick already starting to fill.
Are you sure you're not interested?
Ugh, fine, Rhys says, pulling Jack down again so Rhys can kiss that stupid grin off his face. Which is how Rhys finds himself bent over in front of the couch, arm braced against the back and face buried in the cushions to muffle himself as Jack works him open with his tongue and fingers. The wet noises Jack is making are obscene, and Rhys feels like he's going to shake apart before Jack even gets his dick in him.
Come on, I'm ready,
Rhys doesn't know how Jack reduces him to begging so quickly, but he does, he always does. Rhys pushes himself up a little so he can look back over his shoulder.
Just fuck me already, please, Jack.
It's the please that does it, just like Rhys knew it would. Jack likes hearing Rhys ask. Sometimes he likes to wait, to drive Rhys right up to the edge until he's a mess of please and yes and Jack. Times like today, though, Jack pulls back as soon as the word leaves Rhys's mouth. He plants a kiss on the base of Rhys's spine and moves to stand up.
Wait, where are you?
Rhys twists a little more to see better. Jack winks and gives Rhys's ass a proprietary pat.
Don't move, sweetheart. I'll be back in a second.
Then he heads for Rhys's bedroom, and Rhys grumbles but stays put. He buries his face back in the cushions and tries not to think about what he must look like, bent over and on display, wet and dripping from Jack's ministrations. His cock twitches between his legs anyway, and Reese shifts toward the couch to try to get some friction on it.
"I thought I told you not to move."
Jack's voice is playful as he resettles behind Reese, and Reese growls faintly at him.
"Taking too long."
Reese tries to move back toward Jack, and Jack's hands catch his hips, steadying him.
"I gotcha."
Jack positions the head of his cock, now slick with lube, against Reese's hole, then pulls Reese slowly back onto it. Reese grits his teeth against the stretch. Even with preparation, it still feels like Jack is splitting him open every time, but soon the spreading warmth overtakes the initial discomfort, and he wants more. Jack knows him pretty well by now, though, and Jack pulls him up and back so Reese is spread out over Jack's lap, impaled on his dick. Jack noses into the bend of Reese's neck.
"You ready to move, babe?"
Reese grins and rolls his hips back in answer, savoring the way Jack's breath hitches against his neck. Reese gets to set the pace this way, and he does, moving himself on Jack's dick as Jack's hands roam up and down Reese's legs and sides. Jack meets him with tiny little thrusts, but he lets Reese take the lead, and Reese takes his time, enjoying the slow build in his stomach. His legs are going to kill him for this tomorrow, but for now all that matters is the roll of Jack's body against his. It's almost too hot for this, sweat dripping and bodies sliding against each other, but Reese lets the heat outside mingle with the warmth spreading within, until it feels like Jack's hands are the only things keeping him anchored in a sea of sensation. His orgasm takes him by surprise, a slow crescendo that washes over him with one of Jack's hands slowly stroking Reese's cock and the other tracing Reese's throat. Reese shakes through it, but Jack holds him steady, grunting against his shoulder as he comes himself a few moments later. Reese leans forward, letting Jack's softening cock slip out of him. He turns and leans back against the couch, pulling Jack down for a thorough kiss. It's slow, without urgency, and Reese lets the moment sink into his bones. When he pulls back, he's suddenly aware that they are both incredibly sticky, covered in sweat and other bodily fluids. Reese would say, "I told you so," but he's distracted by the way Jack's mismatched eyes are looking at him, like he's something to keep. It's not really that important anyway.
He does insist they shower, though.
Even directly out of the shower, Reese can feel the perspiration breaking out again on his skin, and the thought of doing pretty much anything else in this heat makes him want to... not. Jack seems to feel the same.
Christ, it's like a frickin' sauna in here. When did they say your AC would be back online?
Reese hums, running his fingers through his wet hair.
Next week sometime? Maybe Monday? Maybe later?
He's trying not to think about it. Jack pulls up his jeans and fiddles with the fly before zipping up, like he's thinking.
Why don't you just come stay at my place? Then you won't broil to death.
He puts one hand in his pocket, fingers curling around something. Reese checks his hair in the mirror one last time, and then turns back toward Jack, talking as he does.
Well, unless you plan on me lounging around all day, like some sort of kept man, I'd need my own...
He stops when he sees what Jack's holding out to him.
Oh.
It's a key, one that matches the one Jack uses on his apartment door. Only this one is shiny and new, where Jack's is worn with use. Jack normally talks quickly, but the words seem to almost trip over themselves to get out of his mouth.
Had it made a while ago. Couldn't really find the right time to... Well, now seems like a good time. It's yours if you want it. I mean, it's mine, but it's yours. Jesus, say something. Save me from myself.
You big nerd. Reese knows the grin on his face is a little goofy, but the look of relief on Jack's face more than makes up for it. Reese takes the key out of Jack's fingers, and Jack's shoulders relax, tension draining out of them. Reese hooks his fingers through the belt loops on Jack's jeans. Come here. He pulls Jack close, kissing him as soon as he's in range. Jack's hands settle on Reese's hips, lightly at first, and then more firmly as Reese leans into him. Yeah, Reese thinks to himself. Worth the wait. To be continued. Angel, Part 7 of the RSVP series, written by 36 Save Files, read by Argentum Lupin. The first serious disagreement that Reese and Jack have, beyond who gets to pick the movie, Reese usually wins, or whose car to take, Jack's stubborn about this, is about Jack's daughter. Reese wants to meet her. We've been dating for how long now, and I never see her. Jack stomps down on his first response, which is, that's because I never see her. Because if he says that, he'll have to think about whose fault that is, and he's gotten pretty good at not thinking about that. Instead, he mumbles something about school schedules and extracurricular activities, and how the restaurant keeps him busy, and doesn't look at Reese while he does it. Reese doesn't buy it for a second.
Uh-huh.
He points at the fridge. That's why you've got a post-it that says, Angel, 17th to 20th. Damn it. Jack glares at the note as if it has personally betrayed him. It has. And takes a swig of the soda in his hand to stall for time while he scrambles for something to say. It's not that he doesn't want Reese to meet Angel. Angel is the one thing that Jack's done right in his life. She's everything that's good about him, and of course he wants to share that with Reese. He does. It's just that... Angel hasn't seen him at his worst, thank God, but what she did see was bad enough. And who knows what she's heard from her mother's family. All Jack knows is that his daughter is watchful around him. There's a shadow in the back of her eyes, like she's just waiting for him to disappoint her. And he can't do that again. He can't. So it's not that Jack thinks that Angel won't like Reese or that Reese won't like her. Reese wants to know Angel, and Jack knows that Angel would like Reese with his endearing awkwardness and his dorky sense of humor. And that's the crux of the problem, really. Jack thinks Angel would like Reese too well, and would tell Reese to get out while the getting's good, or that she'd tell Jack to break it off before he screws things up. Angel is mature beyond her years, and again, whose fault is that? And a good judge of character. Those blue eyes see right through him, and she is, has had to become, too smart for Jack's particular brand of bullshit. Jack doesn't know if he can stand it if Angel tells him he's not good enough for Reese, because deep down in his heart, he knows she'd be right. Jack? Reese's voice breaks him out of that particular spiral, and Jack can't help but be grateful even as he wants to escape this conversation. You okay in there? He's frowning at the can in Jack's hand, and looking down, Jack realizes that it's dented beneath his grip. I'm fine, Jack says automatically, moving to dump what's left of the soda down the drain. Not too long ago, this is where he would have reached for something stronger because this is excruciating, but he knows where that road leads him, and he's not going back. He hears Reese sigh behind him. Yeah, you look real fine. When Jack turns back around, Reese is leaning against the counter, arms folded. Look, if you don't want to introduce me, just say so. It's not that. Jack cuts him off, because how could Reese even think that? Reese raises his eyebrows at him, and the unspoken, then what is it, is so loud it practically echoes between them. Reese stands there silently, in his soft sweater with his eyes wide and guileless, and he doesn't know what he is asking. And Jack feels his resolve crumbling. Fine, Jack says, and he can't help the tightness in his voice. But if this goes south, don't say I didn't warn you. Jack doesn't have very many weekends with Angel. He hadn't been lying when he said her schedule was busy. She's involved in so many extracurriculars he can't keep track, and when she's not volunteer tutoring or striking fear into the hearts of the opposing volleyball team, she's studying. Almost done with high school, with colleges crawling over each other to make her an offer, he's so proud of her he doesn't know what to do with himself. His little girl is almost all grown up, and when did that happen? Where were you when that happened, says a little voice inside him, and Jack shoves it down with practiced efficiency. He knows his ex-wife wants him to do more with Angel. Take her out places, have experiences. And he tries, he really does, but these days Angel is more interested in finishing her calculus homework than going to the amusement park. He doesn't have it in him to make her go out somewhere when she's happy at his dining room table, textbooks spread out and one foot kicking idly while he putters in the kitchen, cleaning up from lunch. That's how Reese finds them when he lets himself in, Angel plowing through logarithmic functions and Jack loading the dishwasher. It's incredibly domestic, and Jack feels abruptly self-conscious when he sees the way Reese is looking at him, warm and smiling. Then Reese turns that smile on his daughter, who is inspecting Reese keenly. You must be Angel. And Jack kicks himself into action and makes introductions. Reese puts his hand on a chair back and looks a question at Angel. She nods, and he takes a seat next to her. And that's it. This is happening, and there's no taking it back now. It turns out that Reese has a head for logarithms, and as Jack puts the last few glasses in the top rack, he watches Reese point at one of the problems on Angel's paper and trace something in the air with his hands. Angel's eyes catch on Reese's right hand, and when Rhys sees where she's looking, his face loses some of its animation and he pulls his arm back closer to his body. Angel eyes him thoughtfully, then hands him her pencil and pushes her paper toward him. He takes it hesitantly, but at her encouraging nod, he bends his head close to hers, sketching something out on the paper between them. As Jack dries his hands on a towel, listening to the occasional giggle or baritone murmur, he wonders how he was ever afraid of this. Watching Rhys and Angel's heads bent together at his table feels like something slotting into place, and Jack wants to hold his breath, to hold on to this moment before it ends. Then Rhys looks up and catches his eyes, fond and at home, and Jack lets himself think for the first time that maybe this doesn't have to end. Rhys stays for dinner, which Jack cooks. Rhys offers to help, and Jack puts him to work prepping the vegetables, which he is, much to Jack's dismay, miserable at.
No, those are all different sizes. What, have you never held a knife before?
Of course I have. Rhys splutters. Does it matter? They're just going into the pan, right? He frowns down at his mismatched carrots.
They're just going in the... Aw, jeez, you're killing me here.
Jack throws up his hands in exaggerated disgust when he catches Angel laughing at them.
Come on, Angel, tell him how wrong he is.
If they're not the same size, they'll cook unevenly, Angel says, pushing her hair behind her ear and grinning. Then you'll have crunchy and mushy all in the same bite. Rhys makes a face, but he goes back to cutting down the larger pieces. This is why I buy things pre-cut.
Pre-cut? That's it. Get out of my house.
But Jack is sliding an arm around Rhys's waist and fitting himself against Rhys's back. Rhys tries to fend him off with a, hey, I'm working here, but he doesn't try very hard, and Jack rests his chin on Rhys's shoulder to supervise. He catches Angel watching them. She doesn't look upset with him, and she doesn't look like she's about to tell Rhys to run for the hills, either. She looks happy, content, in a way that Jack wants to frame and hang up, and somehow the moment where she asks Jack what he thinks he's doing never comes. After dinner, when Rhys has left and Jack and Angel are moving around each other in the kitchen cleaning up, he nudges her gently with his elbow because he has to know.
So, Rhys, he's pretty all right, right?
Yeah, he's all right, Angel says, and Jack is about to take offense on Rhys's behalf when he realizes she's laughing at him. He puffs up in mock umbrage anyway, just to see her giggle, but deflates a bit when she sobers. You know I can't tell you what to do with your life, Dad, but... Jack's stomach drops all at once because here it comes. I think you should keep him.
Look, I can... Wait, what?
Angel rolls her eyes at him. Keep him. He's obviously good for you. It's about time, really. Jack just stares because this is really not how he thought this conversation was going to go. And Angel huffs at him. Anyway, Angel lifts herself on her toes to kiss his cheek. Just think about it. And then she's off to the guest bedroom in a swirl of black hair. Jack stands where he is, looking after her. Keep him, huh? To be continued.
Revelation. Part 8 of the RSVP series. Written by 36 Save Files. Read by Argentum Lupin. It takes a while before Rhys sees it, but when he does, he could kick himself. Jack's been a bartender for most of his adult life, and he still puts the occasional shift in now that he owns Hyperion, so his exhaustive knowledge of alcohol and cocktails comes as no surprise. He orders drinks all the time, for Rhys when he's feeling adventurous but can't decide, or for Nisha if she's left the table and the waiter comes by. For himself, though, Jack always seems to have soda or water, and if someone asks, he always has a line. He's driving later. He has to be up early tomorrow. Something innocuous. It takes a while for Rhys to realize that Jack's friends never ask. One night, Rhys tries to return the favor. They're out celebrating Rhys's promotion, and Jack excuses himself to take a call from Angel. Rhys doesn't mind. It's apparent to anyone with eyes how much Jack dotes on his daughter, but Rhys gets the feeling that maybe things weren't always so good between them. Between joint custody and Angel's hectic schedule, Rhys sees Jack more often than she does, and quite frankly, Rhys would find it hard to begrudge Angel anything, let alone a phone call. So Jack is gone when their server comes by to ask if they need anything, and Rhys orders another Manhattan for himself and a Jack and Coke for Jack. Jack had started out with just soda, but they're celebrating, right? Jack comes back, and Rhys picks up the play-by-play where he'd left off. He's just gotten to the really good part, describing Vasquez's douchebag face when he saw Rhys in his new office, when Jack picks up his drink. His eyes are on Reese's face, but when the glass comes underneath his nose, he raises his eyebrows and looks down at it.
"Did you order this?"
he asks, interrupting Reese's loving depiction of the murderous rage in Hugo's eyes.
"Huh?
Oh, yeah. Nisha's always making Jack and Coke jokes, so I figured that's what you drank. Did I get it wrong?" Jack hesitates for a moment, and when he finally says, "Nah, you're fine, pumpkin," and sets the glass down, Reese is 100% positive that that's not what Jack had started out to say. Reese frowns, and he's about to open his mouth. That's not what it looks like. When he sees the careful way Jack sets the glass down just out of casual reach, and something clicks.
Oh.
Oh. He had just assumed, but now that he's thinking about it, and why is this just now occurring to him? He's never actually seen Jack with a drink in his hand that wasn't non-alcoholic. Jack makes great cocktails, but he never tastes them. He says he doesn't need to, he knows they're good. When Reese looks back across the table, he finds Jack watching him. Jack's trying to act casual, but Reese can see the faint tension in his shoulders, and Reese knows with a sudden, bone-deep certainty that Jack thinks Reese is going to judge him for this, that he hasn't said anything because he thinks that it will lower him in Reese's eyes. Reese still feels like an idiot, but it looks like they're well matched in that regard.
Sorry, Jack, but that's all he gets out before Jack reaches across the table, grabbing Reese's hand.
Don't be sorry, sweetheart, it's not your fault.
His tone is light, but there's relief in his eyes, and if Reese didn't love this man already, that right there would have done it. Reese's fingers tighten on Jack's, and Reese replays what he's just thought to himself. If he didn't... But he does, doesn't he? It doesn't quite feel like a revelation. It feels like something he's known all along, like the world resettling into place after a disruption. Reese watches Jack watching him with something akin to resignation in his eyes, like he's dodged one bullet, but he knows there's another one coming. It took Reese a while to see it, but eventually he realized that Jack treats every potential bump in their relationship like it's going to be the last straw. Like it's going to be the last straw for Reese. As if Reese could walk away from this. Reese is pretty certain they're past that, that they have been for a while.
Hey, Reese says gently, shaking his hand a little where it's caught in Jack's. You can tell me this stuff, you know. It's okay, I promise.
I know.
Jack says, but he doesn't sound like he really believes it. There's a smile back on his face, though, so Reese isn't going to push it.
Not tonight, anyway.
At least now Reese knows what he has to do. To be continued. Rules of Engagement, Part 9 of the RSVP series. Written by 36 Save Files. Read by Argentum Lupin. After the key thing, Reese ends up spending more and more time at Jack's place. Jack can't decide which he likes better, being at Reese's apartment and making himself at home among the things Reese chooses to surround himself with, or seeing Reese doing the same at Jack's. Fortunately, Reese doesn't make him choose. Reese never makes him choose. In fact, the only complaint Jack has about the whole arrangement is that the apartment suddenly seems emptier when Reese isn't there, which is absurd. Jack scowls at the couch, whose only crime is to sit vacant. This is fine. There's no reason at all he shouldn't enjoy stretching full length as he flips through the channels on the TV. It's just that he can't get comfortable. First, the cushions are too soft, then he shifts and they're too hard, and when he realizes he's trying to make room for another body that's not joining him tonight, he throws his hands up in disgust and stomps out of the room. There was nothing on anyway. Frankly, it's pissing Jack off a little, the way he suddenly can't sleep as well in his own bed, unless Reese is there next to him. The way he picks up the heavy cream he knows Reese likes in his coffee at the store without even thinking about it. The way he wants Reese to be there, whether it's at big events like Angel's graduation, or just to come baby him when Jack gets sick. He might have to do something about this. When he thinks about it, Jack isn't sure if he's more afraid that Reese will say no, or that Reese will say yes. The no, well, that would be devastating. He can't lie to himself about that. Jack knows how lucky he is to have Reese. His breath catches sometimes to think that if it hadn't been for that ad, if it hadn't been for some stupid fucking joke, He might never have known what it was like to have Reese rolling his eyes at him while Jack complains about Reese's cooking skills, or to wake up to a pile of tousled brown waves that have somehow taken more of their fair share of the blankets. The yes, though. Look, it's a big commitment. Jack knows he's given it a shot once already, and look how that had turned out. This is different, though, if he's being honest with himself. Back then, there had been Angel to think about, and, well, Jack fucked up a lot of things those years. His marriage had only been one of them. After that, Jack had sworn never again. But God, he never thought he could feel this way again about someone who wasn't Angel. Like, Reese doesn't even need to ask, because Jack will say yes anyway, whatever it is. Jack props his head on his hand, watching Reese sleeping next to him. The sun is breaking through the window, and as it edges up over Reese's eyes, he frowns and blinks awake. He focuses on Jack blearily.
Were you watching me sleep? Like a creepy old man?
Good morning to you too, sunshine.
I knew it, creeper.
But Reese is smiling. Jack thinks about waking up to this every day, and in this moment, with the sunlight painting everything gold and Reese all soft and warm in his bed, Jack thinks he might be able to see his way to yes. Jack finds himself stopping and looking at the window display of the jeweler near Hyperion. He's not ring shopping. He's not even ring looking. He's just pausing on the sidewalk, that's all. And if it happens to be in front of a display of wedding bands, he might as well look at it. And if he happens to come to a stop one day when the display changes, if he detours inside to ask about one particular item, classic but with a modern twist, the sales associate assures him, very stylish, he's just doing research, okay? Just like it had been research when he had asked Vaughn, extremely casually, of course, and not at all in a weird, awkward exchange, if he knew how big Reese's fingers were. Vaughn had looked at him for a long moment, then said, "Look, good on you, man. I'll be first in line to congratulate you, but I have absolutely no idea. Also, terrible way to phrase that question." So that had been a bust. Except that it hadn't been, because Vaughn had texted him 2 days later.
"Size 9, you owe me for this."
It's platinum edged with rose gold, and it looks warm, like Reese. He stares at the thing for a long time, rolling it in his fingers, weighing it in his palm, long enough that the associate tells him to let her know when he's ready to make a decision. When he signs on the line, it feels like a foregone conclusion. The thing is that once he has the ring, he still can't quite figure out how to do it. He can't just ask. There are rules to this kind of thing, a script, right? A romantic dinner, a stunning sunset overlooking the city. It has to be perfect, because Reese deserves perfect. But the perfect situation never quite seems to arrive. Dinner dates come and go, but the ambiance is never right. Or they go hiking and Reese walks into a patch of poison ivy, because that's apparently something he does. Meanwhile, Jack remains hyper-aware of the ring, whether it's burning a hole in his pocket or sitting in the safe in his office, and every time he looks at Reese, he chokes on the words. This is the key situation all over again, Jack thinks angrily, but he still can't bring himself to do anything about it. Weeks go by, and Reese starts acting a little weird. Reese has his own brand of weird, sure, but this is different. Jack will turn and find Reese looking at him intently, but when Jack asks what the matter is, "Do I have something on my face? Is my hair more handsome than usual? Come on, pumpkin, give me something." Reese shifts his eyes and mutters that it's nothing. It's an obvious lie, and it makes Jack uneasy. Jack thinks about the ring box sitting in his safe and wonders if he's running out of time. Wonders if this is it, if it's the beginning of the end. It comes to a head one otherwise unremarkable evening when Reese is at Jack's place. Reese hasn't cooked. He's not allowed to anymore, except under Jack's supervision. But he has brought over a truly excellent tart from the bakery that Jack likes, the one near Reese's apartment. Jack has already wolfed down his half, and is trying not to eye the half-eaten slice on Reese's plate too obviously, when Reese laughs and pushes it over. "Don't hurt yourself," he says, a small smile on his lips, and Jack doesn't need any more encouragement than that.
"Aw, sweetheart, this is why I keep you around,"
he says indistinctly around a mouthful of buttery crust.
"Is it?"
Reese says. It sounds playful, but something in his tone makes Jack look up, and the half-smile on Reese's face has gone wistful. All of a sudden, Jack thinks that this might be a moment, might be the moment, with Reese's laughter still in the air and a smile on his face. But Jack's hands are full of fork, and the ring is in his safe, and he didn't think it would happen like this. Jack is about to tell Reese to stay right there, don't move, when Reese unfolds his arms and sets his palms on the table.
Okay, he says. Okay.
And the second one sounds like it's more to himself than to Jack.
I didn't plan to do it like this, but I can't wait any longer. We need to talk.
We need to talk. Jack's stomach goes cold. He's heard that one before. And when he sees the almost defiant way Reese is looking at him, the last few weeks rearrange themselves in Jack's head. Reese's changed behavior, the way he's been staring at Jack like he's on the verge of saying something and then swallowing it at the last minute. Reese is breaking up with him. And God damn it! He was always afraid this day would come, but he's not ready for it. He's never been ready for it. Especially not now. Maybe it was a good thing he had never found a moment, Jack thinks numbly. At least then he'd spared Reese telling him no. Sure enough, Reese stands and moves over to where his jacket is lying on the breakfast bar, and he's saying something, but Jack can't hear it over the ringing in his ears. Jack almost stays where he is, but if this is it, if this is the end, then he wants to capture every last bit of it before Reese walks out of his life. Even if it feels like it's ripping him apart. When he turns, he sees Reese pulling a small black box out of the inside pocket of his coat. Reese's voice filters back in slowly. Has been the best part of my life, really. And I know this is sudden. We haven't talked about it, but I just... Reese swallows. I want to know if you'll... If you want to... Oh, fuck it, here. Reese opens the box in his hands and thrusts it toward Jack. It's hard to look away from Reese's face, but when he tears his eyes away to look at what's in Reese's hands, he sees... a ring, brushed gold, surrounded by platinum. It's simple, but stunning. It looks like a wedding band, but that doesn't make any sense. Nothing about this makes any sense to Jack at all.
What?
Jack's voice doesn't even sound like his own. Jack, Reese says slowly and distinctly. His voice is steady, but his hands are shaking just a bit. I am asking you to marry me. Jack stares at him as the world upends itself for the second time in as many minutes, something expansive and bright unfolding in his chest. It hurts to breathe. Jack, say something. Reese's voice cracks a little, and that jolts Jack into action. The ring. He scrambles out of his chair, toppling it in the process, and Reese has to step back as Jack practically sprints from the room. The only thought in his head that he has to get to that ring, to Reese's ring, as fast as he can. He tears down the hall and punches in the code to the safe, gets it wrong the first time because he's moving too fast. Too slow, hurry up! And when he grabs the box, it feels weighty for its small size, like it's the most important thing in the world. In this moment, it might very well be. When he comes back, Reese is standing in Jack's tiny kitchen, staring at the box in his hands with the worst look on his face. And only then does it occur to Jack what a monumentally shitty thing he has just done to Reese. He must have been so nervous, and Jack up and left him, but now is his chance to make up for it. Now, and possibly for the rest of his life. That thought doesn't scare him at all anymore, and that's how Jack knows he's making the right decision. Jack marches up to Reese, who actually flinches back from him, and Jack has handled this terribly. This is not at all how it was supposed to go. But there's no way out but forward. He snatches the box in Reese's hands out of unresisting fingers and shoves his own box into them. There, he says. His voice sounds like he's just run a marathon. That's my answer. Reese looks at him and then looks down at the box in his hands. He opens it with fingers that Jack will tell him later were only shaking a little, and then he gasps and his hand flies up to his mouth. He looks back at Jack and there are actual tears in his eyes. Jack beams at him. This is more like it. Things got a little off script for a minute there, but Jack fixed it. Then Reese balls up the hand in front of his mouth and punches Jack hard, right in the shoulder where he knows it'll hurt. You asshole! And now Reese is laughing and crying at the same time, which is... Well, it's not on script exactly, but it might be better, because now Reese is pulling him in for a kiss, and Jack has kissed Reese hundreds, thousands of times before, but this feels new. It feels like he's relearning the shape of Reese's mouth for the first time, and he's grinning into it even as his free hand settles on Reese's hip to pull him closer. Pretty soon, though, Jack starts to get impatient. "Here," he says, in between pressing his lips to the corner of Reese's mouth. "Here, let me..." He pulls back and takes Reese's left hand in his own, and Reese sobers a bit as Jack slips his ring over Reese's knuckles and settles it on his finger. Reese spreads his fingers to inspect them, and he must like what he sees, because when he looks back at Jack, his smile is blinding.
"Okay,"
Reese says.
"My turn."
Jack finds himself holding his breath and watching as Reese slides the ring down his finger, and he forcibly exhales when the ring comes to a stop at the base. He can feel it resting on his hand, but it doesn't feel nearly as heavy as he thought it might. Reese brushes his fingers over Jack's knuckles, grazing the ring as he does, and chuckles slightly.
"You have the largest fingers, you know that?" There's only one thing he can say to that. "I didn't hear you complaining when I had them up your..." "Oh my god, stop!"
But Reese is laughing. Jack flexes his fingers to feel the ring on his hand, and he is not really aware of it, just thinking out loud when he says,
"Christ, you nearly gave me a heart attack with that 'we need to talk' line."
Reese frowns.
"What did you think I meant?"
"Crap."
"Nothing. It's not important."
Jack goes to kiss him again, but Reese pulls back, still frowning.
"No, seriously, what did you..."
Jack can see the exact moment Reese gets it, because his eyes go wide and his mouth parts on a soft little, "Oh." Then he grins sheepishly, fondly, and pulls Jack in with a hand on the back of Jack's neck. The metal is cool, but Jack's skin feels heated, and Reese's touch is a relief.
"I'm not going anywhere, Jack."
Reese rests his forehead against Jack's, and with his free hand he rubs his thumb over Jack's new ring.
"Not now, not later, not ever."
And when he closes the distance between them, lips warm and firm and sure on Jack's, Jack finally, finally lets himself believe. To be continued. Memento, Part 10 of the RSVP series, written by 36A Files, read by Argentum Lupin. When he and Reese move in together, Jack keeps an eye out for the kitten bouquet because, protests or no, Reese loves cats, and that was a stroke of freaking genius on Jack's part. He fully intends to display it somewhere prominent so visitors can admire his gift-giving prowess, but it doesn't show up amidst the whirl of boxes and unpacking, and even poking into closets and drawers later when Reese isn't around fails to uncover it. And that's, well, that's disappointing. But it's not anything Jack's going to bring up with Reese, even if it hurts a little somewhere Jack refuses to acknowledge. It was just a bunch of stuffed animals. It's not that important. What is important is making this dinner date, because if he's late picking Reese up for Valentine's Day dinner, he won't hear about it exactly, but Reese's gently disappointed silence is deafening. And really, Jack has had enough of people being disappointed at him to last a lifetime. He tries to avoid it with Reese when at all possible. So he pats the dash in apology as the car slides into a parking spot, tires squealing, and breezes past an amused-looking security guard on his way into the building where Reese works. He skips the elevator in favor of taking the stairs two at a time, and he only makes one wrong turn on the way to Reese's office. Look, it's not like he comes here a lot, and he remembers it's in a corner, just not which one. Jack has a whole line prepared about how he is on time, damn it, even if there are only 2 seconds to spare, but that train of thought gets derailed when he pushes the office door open. Reese looks up and smiles. I hope you didn't break any laws to get here. And normally Jack would be indignant at both the implication that he was late and that the cops could even catch him, but he's still fixated on what's sitting in the window behind his fiance. I didn't know you'd kept it, he says instead. Reese frowns like he doesn't know what Jack's talking about. Then he half turns to follow Jack's gaze. It's a little dusty, the once vibrant pastels faded from sitting in the sun, and the paper it had come wrapped in is brittle with age, but the infamous plush kitten bouquet is clearly visible on a ledge behind Reese's desk. Oh. The smile Reese turns back on Jack is fond and amused, even with the faint dusting of pink spreading across Reese's cheeks. What, you thought I'd got rid of it?
You bitched enough about it at the time. Can you really blame me?
Jack cuts off as Reese gets up and comes around the desk, stepping in close and running his fingers behind Jack's tie. Jack doesn't normally wear one, but this is a special occasion and all that. And anyway, Reese seems to like it from the smile that curves his lips. "Of course I kept it," Reese murmurs, fingers tightening around Jack's tie. With the inch or so he has on Jack, that Jack will flatly deny to anyone who dares to mention it. It really shouldn't be possible for Reese to be looking through his lashes at Jack, but he seems to be managing. "You gave it to me." Reese pulls on the tie, but Jack is already moving, because Reese can't just say shit like that and not expect to get kissed. Reese hums faintly, and Jack chases it with his lips, hands sliding around Reese's waist. He's tempted to kick the door shut and say, "Screw dinner," but as if he can read Jack's mind, Reese pulls back. "I am not putting on a show for the entire office." Reese laughs at Jack's mock pout, then leans in close to speak low and soft into Jack's ear. "But there's always the weekend," he says, and if Jack wasn't thinking about bending Reese over his own desk, he definitely is now. Reese winks and pulls away, reaching for his coat. As he shrugs into it, the ring on his finger glints, and Jack rubs his own ring with his thumb, struck all over again by how lucky he is to have this. Reese looks up and smiles at him, and Jack can't help but smile back. It's involuntary, like breathing, and Jack's a sappy idiot, but at least Reese is just as bad. "Ready?" Reese holds out his hand, and Jack takes it. "Yeah," he says, rubbing his thumb over Reese's knuckles, pausing on the ring. "Ready." To be continued.
Répondez, s'il vous plaît. Part 11 of the RSVP series. Written by 36A Files. Read by Argentum Lupin.
Reese wakes up, sort of. He's never been a morning person, and at this point in his life he probably never will be, and stretches. There's an unfamiliar weight on his hand when he flexes it, and he frowns as he brings it up in front of his face, blinking until it comes into focus. The ring sparkles in the morning sunlight, and Reese turns his hand this way and that, watching the light catch. Oh, right. Reese realizes he's smiling right about the time his cheeks start to hurt, and as he looks over at Jack, still sleeping, he thinks that this is worth it. This is worth everything. Reese starts to reconsider whether weddings are worth it pretty damn quick.
"Elopement is still an option," Jack murmurs to him seconds before Reese's parents join them at the bistro table.
Reese's mother has brought a binder. Christ.
"Shut up,"
Reese suggests through a smile, nudging Jack with his knee. Jack just snorts and leans back in his chair. Lunch goes about as well as Reese had expected. News of Reese and Jack's engagement had initially gotten a cool reception from his parents, but Reese's mother had warmed right up when she realized that there would be no mother of the bride standing between her and the wedding arrangements. Reese's father had remained steadfastly uninterested, but that, at least, is nothing new. Since then, Reese has gotten a steady stream of emails and texts concerning venues, flowers, cake, and all the other details Reese hadn't really considered when he had thought about getting married. He had been thinking about Jack. He hadn't been thinking about colors, but apparently not having the Pantone rainbow memorized was a capital crime. Or close to it. Reese experiences a particularly crushing moment of despair when his mother barely touches her entree before pulling out a half-inch thick sheaf of papers from the wedding binder. It's titled Guest List, and it's color-coded. Reese takes it with a sinking feeling that is confirmed when he sees Aunt Martha's name at the top of the list. His mother is talking, something about the neighbors and the club members and, "Of course the church ladies are coming. You remember Patricia and Marion, don't you? Of course you do." Reese just sits there, letting the words wash over him as he stares at a list of people he doesn't know, or doesn't like, until Jack leans over and takes it out of his unresisting fingers. Jack flips through the pages as Reese's mother lists apparently everyone she's ever met. Jack tosses the list back onto the table, cutting off Reese's mother mid-sentence, and says, "No." Reese's mother gapes at Jack, and Reese feels like doing the same. Reese's father signals the waiter for another martini.
What did you say?"
"You heard me," Jack says calmly, and Reese wants to kiss him. "I said no." This wedding is about him, Jack points a thumb at Rhys, and me. It's not about you, and it's definitely not about getting back at Helen from Bridge Club. So we are not inviting the whole neighborhood. We are not inviting the whole church, and we are definitely not inviting Martha and her pissant son, who have done nothing but make Rhys's life miserable while you look the other way. Rhys's mother's mouth opens and closes, but no sound comes out, and maybe Rhys is a bad son, but he's enjoying the sight. You two can come, if you behave yourselves. That means no railroading Rhys into saying yes to things just because you want to show up every wedding you've attended in the last 10 years, or we're eloping to Vegas. We'll send you a picture when Elvis officiates.
But, Rhys's mother flips desperately through her binder. There are so many details to take care of. You can't just...
I can, Jack says with an unfriendly smile. Remember, Vegas.
Rhys!
His mother hisses, giving up on arguing with Jack and appealing directly to him.
You wouldn't do that to me, would you?
Rhys hesitates out of habit, but then he catches Jack's eye. Jack's face is pleasantly neutral, but his eyes are warm, and Rhys knows that if he wants him to, Jack will back down. Rhys catches Jack's hands with his and threads their fingers together.
I don't know,
Rhys says sunnily, looking his mother dead in the eye. I hear Nevada is nice in the fall. Rhys's mother's face blanches, and she looks furious, but she shuts the binder with a snap, and the rest of the meal progresses in what passes for peace. You wouldn't really have Elvis officiate, would you? Rhys asks later as he and Jack are getting into the car to go home.
I would if that's what you wanted, sweetheart. If it would piss your mother off, that's just a bonus. And besides, Jack says with a wink as he turns the key in the ignition, you can't argue with the king, baby.
Rhys can't help but laugh at that, and he feels a lot better about this whole wedding business than he has in weeks. Jack hires a wedding coordinator the next day. Her name is Annette, she is sharp and professional, and one of the first questions she asks once the pleasantries are out of the way is there anyone you want me to run interference on?
His mother, Jack says, nodding at Rhys. She's got a binder.
Annette looks at Rhys, and when he nods, she winces in sympathy and makes a note in her tablet. Okay, mother, got it. She looks back at Jack. Anyone on your side?
They're not in the picture, Jack says breezily, although Rhys can hear the undercurrent of tension there.
If Annette picks up on it, she doesn't say anything, just makes another note and moves on. Rhys is surprised to find that he actually does have opinions on things like colors and linens and flowers. He is even more surprised to find that Jack does as well. Jack is decisive about what he does and does not want. No on chair bows, yes on cascading string lights, no on a chocolate fountain, and yes on an open bar. Rhys props his head on his fist as Jack and Annette get into an in-depth discussion of daffodils versus roses. Jack likes the yellow on the daffodils, but Rhys is allergic to, like, everything. And roses are more classic, apparently. Jack is frowning to himself when he catches Rhys watching him and raises his eyebrows.
What?
Nothing, Rhys says, smiling. You're just surprisingly well-versed in all of this. I didn't expect that.
Well, I have done this before,
Jack says, and now he's not quite looking at Rhys and... Oh, right. It's not that Rhys had forgotten that Jack had been married before. It had just kind of slipped his mind. Rhys catches Jack's hand in his and looks back over at Annette. How about yellow roses? Best of both worlds. Jack squeezes Rhys's hand as Annette nods and makes yet another note. Yellow roses, very nice. We'll have to custom order the quantities you're talking about, but we've got plenty of time, so that won't be a problem.
Great. What's next on the list?
Maybe Rhys is being overly optimistic, but flowers hadn't been so hard. How bad could the rest be? The venue at the top of Annette's recommendations is not on Rhys's mother's list of preferred locations at all, which is a point in its favor already. It's a smaller place with floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking the water. They can do everything here, Annette says. Ceremony, reception, pictures, a package deal. Jack seems to like the windows, walking right up to them and peering down into the surf crashing below. Rhys trails him up toward the front. He turns and surveys the room and imagines standing up here with Jack in front of everyone he knows, or at least the people who matter.
The guest list is growing again, but if they take this location, he'll at least be able to point to the fire code as a reason to say no. He's not sure if the feeling in his stomach is excitement or nerves. Probably both. Either way, he feels vaguely like he might throw up. Jack rubs a hand down his spine.
You doing okay, babe?
Reese nods. He's fine. Lunch probably didn't agree with him, that's all. We'll take it, he tells Annette. She nods and makes a check mark on her list, then moves off with the venue manager to discuss terms and conditions. One more thing down, only a million to go.
What is this garbage?
Jack says, kicking the door to their condo shut and tossing his keys in the bowl near the door. He looks appalled, and Reese would be hurt if he didn't feel the same way about the music pouring out of the speakers.
Oh, thank God, he says, turning it down. I was afraid you were going to like it.
Yeah, no worries on that front.
Jack leans over the back of the couch and tilts Reese's head up for a kiss. His fingers trail warmth on Reese's neck when he pulls away.
Seriously, what is this? I think my ears are bleeding.
Bossa Nova? Reese skips to the next track, which is just as bone-thumping as the last one. He's one of the DJs that the venue has approved.
Well, take him off. What else have they got?
Jack comes around the couch and flops down in the corner, nudging Reese's laptop with his feet until Reese lifts it off with a huff and lets him settle his legs over Reese's lap.
You child,
Reese says, rolling his eyes and setting his laptop aside, but not before queuing up the next artist.
You love me anyway,
Jack says smugly, snagging his fingers in Reese's sweater and tugging him down.
God help me, I do.
Jack's lips are curved up as he presses them to Reese's mouth, and the kiss this time is slower, more heated, and Reese finds himself shifting, twisting out from under Jack's legs and settling over him on the couch. He's got his legs twined with Jack's, one of Jack's hands in his hair, and things are getting interesting when Jack pulls back and cocks his head.
What's this?
He says, and if he expects a coherent answer, he really needs to get his hand off of Reese's ass.
What's what?
Reese asks, irritated at being interrupted, and leans back down to mouth at Jack's neck.
What's this music?
Jack clarifies, pulling Reese's head back up by his hair, and Reese can't quite stop the noise he makes at that. Jack grins at him, knowing and fond, but he lets go of Reese's hair and slides his hand down Reese's back instead. Reese makes a grumpy sound of disappointment, but he braces himself on Jack's chest, ignoring Jack's oof, and turning the laptop towards himself.
Zero? With an actual zero at the end? Looks like they do...
Reese scrolls through the rest of the set list. Symphonic rock. You know, classic rock, only with violins.
Huh.
Jack smooths his hand up and down Reese's side.
What do you think?
I think you like it, and honestly, that's good enough for me.
Jack catches Reese's shoulder and turns him back around.
Is it?
Jack asks, face gone serious, and Reese feels like there's more there than he knows how to hear right now.
Yeah? We are talking about the music, right?
Jack's face smooths out and he pulls Reese closer.
Yeah, of course. Let's book him.
Reese settles against Jack's chest and lets the sound of violins playing Highway to Hell wash over him. Jack will come out with it in his own time. Reese just has to be patient. And survive this wedding, of course. Reese relents and lets his mother make suggestions for a caterer. She is very insistent about the daughter of a friend who is opening her own business and will do it for a fraction of the cost of those overpriced hacks the venue will give you. Jack's wary of going to someone who's not on Annette's list, but Reese feels like he has to give his mother something, so they block out an afternoon and make the appointment for a tasting course. 2 hours later, Jack is rubbing Reese's back soothingly while Reese pukes his guts up and the would-be caterer offers frantic apologies outside the small bathroom stall. Jack hums to himself, and as Reese sits back and wipes tears from his eyes, he sees Jack pull his phone from his pocket. With an intuition born of long familiarity, Reese says,
"Please don't call my mother right now."
Jack pouts, and Reese starts to stand, only to have his stomach rebel again. He closes his eyes against a wave of nausea, and then it occurs to him,
"Please don't text my mother either."
"Too late, babe."
Jack's voice is triumphant, but his hand pats Reese's back sympathetically.
"I told her we were only going with his caterer if she's looking for a Roman-style party. You know, the vom—"
"Please don't say that word."
Reese groans and clenches his teeth.
When the urge to throw up again passes, he turns and glares at Jack. Besides, those weren't even real. Popular misconception.
Really? Bummer, because that's a great joke.
Reese grumbles, but he doesn't resist as Jack hauls him all the way to his feet.
Feeling better? Close enough? I don't know about you, but I'm ready to blow this joint.
Please. Reese lets Jack sling an arm around his back and steer him out of the small bathroom, past the caterer who is nearly in tears herself. Reese finds it hard to care much, though, when it was her undercooked shrimp that had done this to him. That, of course, Jack had passed on, so of course Reese is suffering alone right now. In any case, when they're safely back out in Jack's car, he has Jack call Annette and set up appointments with her top choices.
No seafood, though, right, Reese?
Jack glances over at Reese and pats his thigh, and Reese just groans at him and closes his eyes. The wedding preparations proceed apace, although Reese hands more and more of it over to Annette and Jack. He does have opinions on tuxes. Reese knows what he looks good in, and he's not about to let some two-bit tailor talk him out of it. But as for the rest of it, he's happy to let Jack stand between him and his mother, between him and the rest of the world, who apparently thinks he should have opinions on things like place settings and stationery. And it's not that he doesn't. He's just starting to think that maybe it all doesn't matter very much. Guests start arriving. Jack and Reese both take the week off from work, and the days fill with lunches and dinners, greeting old friends and new ones as they filter in from across town and out of it. Even though he signed off on each name on the guest list, Reese is surprised at how many people keep showing up, and how many people are taking time out of their lives to see him and Jack tie the knot. Their mailbox starts filling up with congratulatory cards and packages, most of which turn out to be items on the small registry Reese's mother had insisted they have. Jack had initially been on Reese's side, i.e. against it, but when he discovered that he could put a solid crystal unicorn paperweight on the gift list, he had changed his tune, the traitor. Seeing the delight on Jack's face when he unwraps the awful gaudy statue, however, and there had been no return label, but Reese is 100% sure that it came from Vaughn, Reese supposes he can provisionally forgive him. 3 days before the wedding, Reese and Jack drop their rings off at the jeweler to be polished for the ceremony. Reese keeps finding himself flexing his fingers afterward, looking for a weight that's not there anymore. His ring finger feels naked, and he hates it. It's not that Reese doesn't want to get married. He does. Being with Jack doesn't seem like something he wants anymore, it seems like something he is. He can't quite imagine not coming home to Jack's stupid jokes and impossible hours and heated, burning intensity. But all of this, from the flowers to the precisely scripted invitations to the carefully arranged seating chart, all of this doesn't capture the way Jack looks at Reese when he thinks Reese isn't looking. None of this can touch the way Jack makes Reese feel more alive, more himself, than maybe he ever has in his life. Not even close. Which is maybe what's really bothering him. He's out on the patio behind the hotel where they've blocked out rooms for their guests, hands resting on the railing overlooking the river. The sun is already set, but Reese isn't really out here for the view. He's trying not to, but he can't stop replaying the rehearsal dinner over and over in his head. It hadn't gone badly, exactly, but he can't stop reliving the way his mother had smugly taken credit for everything Annette had done, or the way his father had been studiously disinterested in everything but his wine glass. The way Jack's side of the table had seemed so small, with just Angel and his brother Timothy. And nothing about Jack is small, Reese thinks angrily, but that's how his mother likes to make people feel, and, hey, Earth to Reese, this railing wants to know what it ever did to you. Jack's voice interrupts his train of thought, and Reese looks down to find his knuckles have gone white. Sorry, he says roughly, forcing his fingers to uncurl. Jack leans next to him, squinting back at the lit-up building behind them. Don't apologize to me. I'm not the one you just tried to strangle. Jack chuckles at his own joke, then looks over at Reese. You ready for this? Ready for this to be over. Jack hums encouragingly, and Reese feels the words spilling out of him. It's just so much. Reese waves his hands, trying to encompass the hotel, the guests, his mother, the whole thing. How did it get this big? Is this even really about us anymore? Jack huffs, and Reese scowls at him. And how is this not driving you up the freaking wall? How are you so calm? Hey. Jack catches Reese's flailing hands in his own. Hold up. Listen. We don't have to do this part if you don't want to. Rhys tries to tug his hands away, but Jack holds them firm. What? Everything's finally ready. Don't you dare tell me you're getting cold feet.
Cold feet? Babe, haven't I been trying to get you to elope with me all along?
Jack lets go of Rhys with one hand to pull his phone out of his pocket, swiping it open with his thumb.
The courthouse is closed by now, but I can book us a flight to Vegas. No problem.
Stop. Stop. Rhys grabs for Jack's phone, but Jack holds it out of reach. We can't just leave.
We could.
Jack sounds dead serious, and Rhys's breath catches.
The wedding is not the important part.
Jack pokes Rhys in the chest, and Rhys's hand comes up automatically to catch Jack's. Jack curls their fingers together.
This is the important part. Look, you remember that night you said yes to me? You mean the night you left me in your kitchen after I proposed to you?
Rhys frowns harder. If this is Jack's idea of buttering him up, it's not working.
Yes, okay, technically. Look, the point is, as far as I'm concerned, that was it. That was us. All of this?
Jack waves the hand still holding his phone.
This is just a formality. We don't have to do this part if you don't want to.
Rhys feels like he can't breathe. You would do that for me? Jack rubs his thumb over the space where Rhys's ring should sit, and Rhys aches to have it back.
Yes,
Jack says, the amusement clear in his voice. But underneath, there's something strong and true that Rhys feels like maybe he should have heard all along if only he had known how to listen.
For you, I would not marry you, if that's what you wanted.
Rhys thinks about it, thinks about taking Jack's phone and dialing Annette and calling the whole thing off. It's strangely freeing, the thought that he doesn't have to go along with what's felt like an inevitability for the last year of his life. That he could say no, and Jack would still be there, waiting for him at the end of the day. That, in the end, is what decides him.
No, he says finally, and it feels like something clicking into place.
I do want this. I love you, Jack Lawrence, and I want everyone in the goddamn world to know it.
Jack grins, brilliant in the fading light. All right, then. I'll tell you what we're gonna do. Tonight, we're gonna go upstairs and I'm gonna suck your brains out through your dick so you can get some sleep.
Rhys snorts, but Jack is on a roll.
Tomorrow, we're gonna get up in front of everyone and declare our goddamn love for each other, and then tomorrow night, I'm gonna fuck you through the mattress, and if I'm lucky, you'll wear that bridal lingerie that I know Nisha bought you. Okay? Sound like a plan?
Rhys laughs, and it feels like the weight of months slipping off his shoulders. That easy, huh?
That easy.
Jack pulls Rhys in and rubs his back in soothing circles.
Pre-wedding jitters are tough, I know. Happens to the best of us.
Then why aren't you having them? Jack's hand stills for a long moment. Then he presses a kiss to Rhys's temple.
Because I already know that the best part is after,
Jack says in a quiet voice that barely carries to Rhys's ears.
When I get to wake up to you the next morning and every morning after that, that's the secret that nobody tells you about weddings, sweetheart. The best part is the after.
Rhys is horrified to find himself sniffling, but it's a far second to the warmth unfurling in his chest.
Sap,
he says, silently defying Jack to call him on the tremble in his voice.
Jack doesn't. He just chuckles. Only for you, Pumpkin. Only for you.
As weddings go, Rhys thinks that it goes pretty well, although he honestly doesn't remember much of it afterwards. The day is a blur punctuated by moments that stand out with striking clarity. Rhys later remembers distinctly, for example, the way Jack's brother Timothy barges into the dressing room just as Vaughn is adjusting Rhys's tie, Tim dragging a grumbling Jack behind him. Rhys, tell Jack he can't wear his yellow sweater underneath his suit jacket. Tim sounds personally aggravated, as if Jack is doing this to spite him. From the way they scowl at each other, identical except for the streak of gray in Jack's hair and the dusting of freckles across Timothy's face, this is not the first time Jack's wardrobe has been a point of contention. Rhys doesn't have siblings, but he does have Vaughn, and he knows the undercurrent of an old argument when he hears one. Jack pulls his arm out of Tim's grasp and steps back, fiddling with the sweater's hem.
It's my favorite sweater. I can wear it at my own wedding if I want to.
You have a perfectly good tuxedo! Tim snaps as Rhys steps past him and into Jack's line of sight. Jack glances at him and away, and his shoulders slump in defeat.
Fine, I'll... He starts, still looking away,
and Reese stops him with a kiss. "Wear the sweater," he says when he pulls back. Jack's eyebrows raise. "It's your wedding. The tux will survive. Besides..." He leans in and pitches his voice so that, hopefully, only Jack can hear it. "You should see what I'm wearing under mine." Jack's eyes light up with interest, and Vaughn claps his hands over his ears. "Didn't need to hear that!" "Oops." Reese bites his lip to keep from laughing as Tim grabs Jack by the arm again, clearly flustered. "Okay, we'll just be going then." He hustles Jack back out of the dressing room as Vaughn gives Reese a long-suffering look. Jack waves goodbye as Tim drags him away, and that's the last Reese sees of him before the ceremony. The ceremony is mercifully short. Vaughn officiates. Nisha had volunteered, but Jack had ruthlessly shut that offer down, much to her disappointment. Reese had turned to Vaughn as an alternative less likely to share embarrassing sex stories in front of all the guests. Jack had wondered out loud if they would need to get Vaughn a box to stand on, for which Reese had elbowed him in the side, but otherwise he had no objection. Reese had tried to imagine before how this would feel, standing up in front of everyone, his hands in Jack's as he repeats the words Vaughn reads to him. "All that I am, all that you are, all that we will be." Now that he's here, the rest of the world seems to drop away, and he can't look away from the smile on Jack's face, in his eyes, can't help the smile spreading across his own. Now that he's here, there's nowhere else he wants to be. The cool weight of Jack's ring is heavy with promise as he puts it back on Jack's hand, and Jack resettling Reese's ring on his finger where it belongs feels like an answer. Kissing Jack as the room erupts into applause and cheers feels like coming home. The reception afterward is one big blur of faces and handshakes and hugs and congratulations. Reese thinks, hopes, that they sat down to eat at some point, but he's not really sure. He thinks he saw Tim chatting up Jack's friend Wilhelm at some point, and he knows he saw Sasha out on the dance floor with August. He probably had some champagne at some point, but he feels drunk just on this evening, on the laughter and the music and the weight of Jack's hand in his. Jack keeps finding excuses to touch him, a hand on Reese's shoulder, or his back, or a brush of elbows as they accept yet another set of well wishes. Each touch stokes the fire in Reese just a little hotter, until he feels like he's burning up from the inside. When Jack finally puts his hand just under Reese's vest, his jacket was abandoned hours ago, slipping the tips of his fingers beneath the waistbands of Reese's slacks, and asks if Reese wants to get out of here, Reese turns into him, pressing them together from chest to thigh. "Thought you'd never ask," Reese purrs, and Jack's hand flexes on his back. The wolfish grin on Jack's face gives Reese exactly 2 seconds of warning before Jack's bending him back and scooping him up, bridal style. Jack turns and heads for the door amid cheers and clapping, and Reese buries his face in Jack's shoulder and laughs like he hasn't in years, frame shaking so much Jack almost drops him. Jack's car is waiting outside, and Reese spends the entire drive back to the hotel, turned in his seat, hand on Jack's thigh, whispering filthy nothings into Jack's ear. Reese is pretty sure Jack breaks every speed limit and possibly the sound barrier on the way, but he's too high on anticipation to care. They make out like teenagers in the elevator, Jack pressing Reese into the wall and Reese wrapping his legs around Jack's waist. They've booked the honeymoon suite, which Reese is sure is lovely, but the only thing he sees is the concentrated satisfaction on Jack's face as he undoes Reese's shirt. They stumble toward the bed, and when Jack undoes Reese's pants and slips a hand inside, he groans into Reese's mouth, fingers sliding over the smooth fabric. "You gonna show me what pretty things you're wearing, sweetheart?" Jack sounds hungry, and Reese grins against his lips. He puts his hands on Jack's and helps him slip the pants down over Reese's hips. Jack frowns faintly as Reese steps out of them, and Reese can tell that Jack's nonplussed by the black briefs Reese is wearing. They're nice, of course, but they're not much different than what he normally wears. Then Reese turns around and lifts the tail of his shirt, and smiles when he hears Jack's breath hitch. The next thing he knows, he has Jack pressed up against his back, arms circling Reese and pulling him close so Jack can bite at Reese's neck and press his hips into Reese's ass. "Goddamn right you are," Jack growls, breath hot in Reese's ear, ramming his half-hard cock between Reese's cheeks where "Property of Jack" is printed in shiny gold script on the otherwise ordinary briefs. He bites down on Reese's ear, and Reese feels his knees go weak. "Oh yeah?" Reese shrugs his shirt all the way off and moves to detach his right arm. Jack hurries to help, and within moments, Reese's arm is set carefully aside on the dresser. Reese turns back to Jack and drapes his arm around Jack's shoulders, pulling him close enough that Reese can bump their noses together. "Prove it," he says, challenging and fond all at once, and Jack presses their lips together and backs him toward the bed. Jack's buttons are easy when you know where they are, but Reese supposes that's only fair as he scoots up toward the head of the bed, Jack crawling after. Jack certainly knows where Reese's are, and he's not shy about pressing them, carting a hand through Reese's hair and biting down on Reese's throat to make Reese shake. It's almost unfair how well Jack can play him, Reese thinks vaguely, as Jack kisses and bites his way down Reese's chest, pressing marks into Reese's skin that he'll be able to feel into tomorrow. The briefs are pulled off with one more amused look, and then Jack is opening Reese up with insistent fingers, crooking them just the way he knows Reese likes, until Reese's back is arching off the bed. "Come on, come on, come on!" Reese tugs at Jack's shoulder, and Jack obliges him, leaning up for a quick kiss before he positions the head of his dick, frowning in concentration. Reese loves this look on Jack's face, like Reese is a complex puzzle Jack is determined to get right. Reese isn't. Reese is embarrassingly easy for Jack. But then Jack's pressing into him, the stretch so much better than just his fingers, and Reese tosses his head back, and there's no more thinking for a while. Reese is biting his lip to try to stave off the orgasm he can feel building in his stomach when he feels Jack threading their fingers together. He opens eyes he doesn't remember closing just in time to watch Jack lift their hands to his mouth and lay a kiss on Reese's ring, eyes locked with Reese's. And what Reese sees there steals his breath away, so much so that when Jack wraps his other hand around Reese's leaking cock, his orgasm feels like an afterthought, like something he already knew. Reese is blinking away tears and trying to breathe through it when Jack suddenly grips Reese's thigh and his hips jerk, and then he's coming too, eyes screwed shut and the other hand still locked with Reese's. When he's done, Jack rolls over to the side, but he doesn't immediately let go of Reese's hand, so Reese rolls with him, letting his breathing slow and reveling in the fuzzy feeling in his limbs. The usually strong lines of Jack's face are softened into something warm and contented, and Reese knows he's smiling dopily, but he doesn't care.
"I love you, you know,"
Jack murmurs sleepily, and Reese blinks. Jack doesn't say it very often, but it's not like Reese doesn't know. Jack has put up with every bit of this wedding business from start to finish, and he had offered to call the whole thing off, to cancel an event a year in the making at a moment's notice, if that was what Reese had wanted. "I love you too," he says softly, and Jack's smile is warm and genuine, and just for Reese. Yeah, Reese knows. Reese rolls over, squinting against the sun coming in from an unfamiliar angle. It takes him a minute to place where he is, but the remains of last night's clothing scattered around the room bring everything rushing back, and he wonders how he ever forgot, even for a second. Jack stirs as Reese sits up, and Reese looks over his shoulder in time to see him blink awake. "Hey," Reese says, grinning goofily. "We got married."
"Yeah, we did,"
Jack answers, voice rumbly with sleep, and reaches out to run a hand down Reese's back. There's no intent to it, just Jack reaching out to touch because he can.
"You're stuck with me now."
Reese turns more fully toward Jack, putting a hand on Jack's chest.
"I was stuck with you a long time ago."
He can feel through his palm what that does to Jack's heart, and he smiles. He feels like he can't stop smiling. Jack tugs on his hand, tumbling him back down to the sheets. He pulls Reese close, slinging an arm around his middle and tangling one of his legs with Reese's.
"Go back to sleep. We don't have anywhere to be."
Jack appears to be taking his own advice, and soon enough his breath is evening out into sleep against Reese's shoulder. Reese lies in bed, hand fitted over Jack's on his stomach and thumb rubbing over Jack's ring, and he thinks that Jack's right. There's nowhere Reese needs to be, nowhere he wants to be, except right here, with Jack's warmth seeping into him from behind and the soft brush of his hair against Reese's neck. "It took a long time to get here, but this is worth everything." The end.